Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Will you please sign in? We see you're injured. Will you please sign in? We'd like to know your name, your finance source. Will greatly help us.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick. It was his first news conference since becoming president-elect, and Barack Obama focused on the economic crisis. Peter Mayer reports.
President-elect Obama says the latest economic reports are an urgent reminder of the need to move on daunting challenges. Mr. Obama said he does not underestimate the enormity of the issue.
Some of the choices that we make are going to be difficult, and I have said before, and I will repeat again, it is not going to be quick. And it's not going to be easy for us to dig ourselves out of the hole that we are in.
But standing at a podium labeled Office of the President-elect, Mr. Obama promised to move quickly to confront the economic mess. He favors another stimulus package to jumpstart the economy. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Chicago.
I'm Mark Noller at the White House, where Barack Obama's call for another stimulus package is on a collision course with President Bush's policy. The administration has repeatedly shown that it's cool to Democratic ideas for public works projects or another extension of unemployment benefits. The White House says its big bailout plan is the best stimulus going.
The latest bad news on the economy, jobless numbers are the highest in 14 years. And in another sign we're not spending as much, retailers have been slow to hire holiday workers.
The big jump usually occurs in November, so time will tell. But retailers look as though they're going to wait and see just how much traffic is in their stores before they do much of their hiring.
John Challenger of Challenger, Gray & Christmas. The nation's longest-serving senator is stepping down as head of the powerful Senate Appropriations Committee. Robert Byrd is 90 and recently defended his decision to stay on the job.
In a culture of Botox, wrinkle cream, and hair dye, we cannot imagine that becoming older is a good thing.
Here's CBS News correspondent Bob Schieffer.
Senator Byrd has been in very poor health in recent months, and I think there was a feeling, and I'm sure he recognized it himself, that he simply couldn't handle the heavy responsibilities of this job.
He will be replaced on the committee by Hawaii's Daniel Inouye. A tragic scene in Haiti's capital today after a school building collapsed. The death toll stands at 30 and will likely go higher. Hundreds of children attend classes in the concrete building. It isn't clear why it collapsed. It's a late-season Category 2 hurricane, and Cubans are keeping a worried eye on its path. Reporter Portia Siegelbaum is in Havana.
Cuba has been hit, you know, with one storm after another this season. Our country's basically been reeling. It has $9.3 billion worth of damage. Nobody was expecting another storm, and here comes Paloma.
Paloma could become a Category 3 before it hits the island on Sunday. On Wall Street today at the closing bell, the Dow Jones Industrials were up 248 points at 8,943. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Peyton Manning. What could be better than the Gear Up with Sony HD sales event? I'm not sure, but I'll try to top it by handing out some of my own gear. Hey there, little fella.
Hi, Mr. Manning.
How about a practice jersey?
But, Mr. Manning, it's so wet.
Why, yes, little fella. Yes, it is.
Ew!
Well, looks like Gear Up with Sony HD is the best way to go. Save $300 when you buy a Bravia HD TV and Blu-ray disc player together.
I don't think I want this.
Bring it out. It's just a little sweat.
It's gross!
Now through November 8th, save $300 when you purchase a qualifying 46 or 52-inch diagonal Sony Bravia HD TV and select Sony Blu-ray disc player together. Whether you're watching the game or watching a movie, the best way to experience HD just got even better. To learn how you can save $300 on a Sony Bravia HD TV and Sony Blu-ray disc player, visit a participating Sony dealer or sony.com/HDNA.
Murder.
guilty.
A jury in Georgia today convicted a man in a shooting rampage at an Atlanta courthouse. A judge and three others were killed. Brian Nichols had argued he was insane at the time. A judge in Riverside, California has refused to move the trial of a man charged with starting a wildfire that killed five firefighters back in 2006. O.J. Simpson will not be getting a new trial after his armed robbery and kidnapping conviction. A judge in Las Vegas says his lawyers failed to prove one was necessary. Simpson will be sentenced early next month. And this is Evangelist Billy Graham's 90th birthday. So how many candles were on the cake?
Two. We figured if we put more than that, he might not blow them out.
His son Franklin Graham said his father's mind is still sharp, though his physical health is failing. He also says his father, a registered Democrat, is praying for Barack Obama. I'm Cammy McCormick, CBS News.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. And while many great wines come from California, when it comes to Pinot Grigio, the best comes from Italy. There you'll find the perfect growing conditions for creating the award-winning Cabot Collection, where Cabot Pinot Grigio gets its crisp, light taste and full fruit flavors. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. Pompey International, Boca Raton, Florida.
Hey, Kelly. So, who'd you hire to do your emails?
What? You know it's just me here.
Come on, I got your newsletter. Pretty fancy, photos, coupons. Come on, who is it?
Oh, no one, silly. I use Constant Contact.
Really?
With ConstantContact.com, it's so easy. They make me look like $1 million, and the emails really work.
Oh, yeah?
It got you in here today, didn't it?
Touché.
ConstantContact.com. Plans as low as $15 a month with a free 60-day trial.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to a fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. Coming your way from sunny San Francisco today. And we're live up and down the left coast, from Monterey and Big Sur on the central California coast, all the way up north of the border via our weekend affiliate, Progressive Talk 1190 in Seattle, KPTK. Lots to talk about, plenty of great people to talk with, and as usual, if you're listening live, you're invited to call in live. Share your comments and questions with us. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. You got that? 888-573-8372. And we pay for the call. We'll kick off the show in a moment with Robert Perry, the distinguished journalist who publishes at ConsortiumNews.com. Later this hour, on the heels of a front-page New York Times story in Friday's paper, we're going to take a fresh look at the conflict that erupted just before the Olympic Games between Georgia and Russia. We're going to talk with Alexander Malakashvili, who is in Monterey and who joined us back in August to discuss these issues, and we'll get his thoughts on the new reports that suggest that Georgia initiated this conflict. And that's something that, I've suspected all along. Also on today's program, journalist Robert Dreyfus, who writes for The Nation and other publications, will join us to preview Obama's foreign policy team. And one of the first picks by President-elect Obama is controversial with progressives, Rahm Emanuel, the Democratic congressman from Chicago, a former Clinton administration White House staffer, and a guy who, he's bruised a few people along the way. And one of them is Christine Sigelis. She ran for Congress against the Archduke of Conservatism, Henry Hyde, in Illinois. Came very close, and then when Hyde retired, it was an open seat, and she wanted to run, and Rahm Emanuel said, no, 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 no. and inserted Tammy Duckworth, who promptly lost to the Republican. So we'll get some sour grapes and an honest appraisal of Rahm Emanuel from a fellow Illinoisan, Christine Segelis, coming up in about 90 minutes from now. And as usual, we'll talk election protection with Brad Friedman in our third and final hour today, Brad from bradblog.com. And there are still races that are undecided in Minnesota, in... I'm blanking here. We've got a rerun underway in Georgia, and we have the case of Ted Stevens in Alaska, where there are huge weirdness and anomalies in the vote count, and we will talk about that with Brad coming up in our third hour. And I make the pledge, as soon as we have fixed the problems with our elections in this country, we will let Brad retire. And until then, he'll be on every week with us to discuss these matters. And Bob Perry is a regular on our program, Robert Perry. He covered Iran-Contra back in the day for AP and Frontline, and he publishes now at consortiumnews.com. Welcome to our program, Bob. How are you today?
Fine, Peter. How are you?
Not too bad. Tell me about the scene at the White House on election night. I read your post at Consortium News.
Well, I was finishing up a little TV thing on about 12th Street, which is in sort of downtown Washington, D.C., and as I was coming out about 1 o'clock or so in the morning, I heard this commotion going on to my west, some blocks, and so it sounded like something was happening over at the White House, so I said, well, I'll go over and check it out, and I went over, and as I got closer to the White House, there were more and more young people streaming to the White House, and I got to around 15th Street, there were these young black men were kind of leaning over toward the cars that were going by and saying something. I couldn't quite catch it, so I got close to them, and as these cars were going by, these young black men were saying thank you to all the cars going by. And then and when I got closer to the White House, there was a crowd that was packed in on that block on the north gates of the White House. There were more people in Lafayette Park. And they were, some of them were chanting Obama, and some were chanting Yes We Can, and others were chanting No More Bush, and some were doing the Nah 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 Goodbye thing. Mm-hmm. So I guess the only real accountability that Bush may face is going to be taunted by
Nah Nah Nah.
yes, that one. Being taunted by some young people, young Americans who were just joyous, and they really were like the future of America. This was a very diverse crowd. There weren't many of the old folks like me in this crowd, but there were a lot of young people, and so I sort of pressed my way through this crowd to the west corner of the White House, and then went up around Lafayette Park, and more kids were streaming down. I understand after I left, the police basically closed down 16th Street as young people marched and sang and banged pots coming down 16th Street to the White House. So it was quite a remarkable scene, a scene of joy.
Now you're a hard-nosed, cold-blooded journalist, but you're also an American, and you've been watching this election very closely, offering critical commentary along the way. How did you feel, Bob?
Well, I think you had to feel touched, and in the piece that you're referring to at consortiumnews.com, I compared it to that opening scene in the book Neck Deep, where my two older sons, Sam and Nat, and I went down to the inauguration on January 20th, 2001, at the very start of the Bush presidency, and there was a massive crowd of angry people. Many more than the Republicans who'd come to celebrate Bush. There were people standing in this cold rain, booing him and having chants of Gore got more and reminding him, hail to the thief, mm-hmm. and reminding him how he got in. And that's a scene that you see part of in Fahrenheit 9/11, although I couldn't see the scene where Bush's limousine was egged by people along Pennsylvania Avenue, but we did see after that the limousine speed up. There was no triumphant walk. He just sped up and went to the White House. Mm-hmm. And that was a very different kind of day than the one I witnessed this past Tuesday.
Indeed. And so where do you place yourself in terms of hopes, expectations, and real politics? And what do you see in the first 72 hours here of Obama's election? He certainly is not sworn in yet. But what do you see taking shape, and how does it fit with your expectations?
Well, I think to some degree, some of the bleeding has stopped for the United States. Obviously, the biggest concerns related to me anyway, related to the constitutional process that we have in this country, our ability to deal with reality, which as a journalist is very important to me. Obviously, there are other big questions like the economy and the fairness of the whole economic and political process. But to me, the idea that the Constitution would be essentially rewritten by another one or two justices on the Supreme Court, that was very significant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's likely that that Obama will appoint justices that are much more moderate, traditional in a sense, in their approach to the law, rather than the radicals that Bush was putting on there, like Alito and Roberts.
You mean those right-wing activist judges?
Yes, and they are activist judges. I mean, that's one of the great ironies. They're not strict constructionists at all.
Amen.
The founders certainly did not think that the president could be a virtual dictator and deny people their rights at whim. That's something that has evolved really out of the Republicans feeling that, especially in the, you know, from the period after the New Deal, the Republicans kind of felt they never would control the Congress. So they focused their attention on the executive and tried to enhance the powers of the executive. And that became an element of Republican political philosophy more than anything else. They wanted the most power, and that meant the most powerful president. And that led eventually to this concept of the imperial president and who could do whatever he wanted, whatever Congress or anyone else thought. And I think that may be stalled. But as far as whether Obama can really solve the larger problems of the country, that certainly remains to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
I do think he's probably going to be very aggressive in trying to do those things that he feels need to be done. I think he may even begin much of this before Bush leaves office, despite his statements at his press conference today about there being only one president, which is obviously true, and his desire not to intrude.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm also hearing behind the scenes is that he's in areas he can cooperate and even almost provide some energy to the fading Bush administration. He's trying to, whether it be the Middle East, maybe figuring out what can still be done with Israel-Palestine, or maybe get some movement on Iran before he takes office, with the cooperation of the Bush people, but not just leaving it to drift. Bush certainly seems like as lame a duck as we've ever seen in the White House. You know, many presidents, even in the last few months, try to do fairly significant things. Bill Clinton tried to get the peace process going in the Middle East. His father, Bush's father, tried to keep going right up until the end. That's been more common. But George W. Bush seems to be just completely lost, like a person with no direction and no idea. Fully repudiated and taunted by these kids on Tuesday night, and not knowing what to do next.
And on Thursday, he held a brief public, it wasn't a news conference, but he spoke to reporters and promised a smooth transition and had warm words for Michelle and Barack and their beautiful daughters. And he sounded a little drunk or drugged or something like that. I mean, he's never been articulate, but he was having trouble getting his words out. And he almost was moved to tears. And
right. There was a little pep talk he gave to his staff where he did seem to be on the verge of tears, yeah.
Yeah. Do you think I'm off? I'm not suggesting that he was drunk, but he did seem impaired. That was my clear impression.
Yeah, I think he is virtually dysfunctional as a president at this point. That certainly is the appearance he gives and the way he behaves. Nothing has gone obviously right. He has presided over a catastrophe for this nation, and he has to, at some level, know that.
Yeah, that is that's his real legacy, and it wasn't what he was hoping for. We're going to take a break and return with Robert Perry. Read his work at consortiumnews.com. There's a great post from our friend Ray McGovern that's up at consortiumnews.com right now. Check it out. And we'll continue. If you have a question or comment, feel free to join us. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372, The Peter B. Collins Show.
K
KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Doing business in Santa Cruz County since 1950, Wilson's Tire and Service has two locations to serve you better wherever you live. Both locations feature full-service, friendly, fast, same-day service, or in the words of hands-on owner Juan Escamilla,
we're fast and fair, and service is job one at Wilson's Tire and Service.
One specializes in tire, brake, and alignment services with state-of-the-art equipment. Looking for fast, friendly, same-day service from experienced pros? Come to Wilson's Tire and Service, now located in Soquel Village at Old San Jose Road in Soquel Drive in Aptos Village, across from the entrance to Nicene Mark State Park. Questions? Give Juan a call at 476-0370. That's 476-0370. Say hello to Juan and get the Wilson's Tire and Service full service.
Don't forget to ask Juan how KRXA listeners can save an additional 10% at Wilson's Tire and Service.
Cornucopia Landscaping in Santa Cruz is a complete design, installation, and maintenance company. Cornucopia Landscaping specializes in water-saving gardens which retain a lush appearance. You can have fruit trees, grapevines, fresh vegetables, and many beautiful ornamental plants while using very little water. In fact, an entire cornucopia landscaping garden sips only as much water in a season as a lawn of equal size gulps down in 1 week. Drip irrigation is the key to a water-saving garden. Are you looking for a beautiful flagstone pathway? Cornucopia Landscaping builds decks, patios, arbors, fences, retaining walls, planter boxes, and many other custom-built wooden structures. Serving Santa Cruz County since 1996. For more information or consultation, call Davis at 831-335-1209. That's 335-1209. That number again is 335-1209.
Looking for a big city dining experience with local ma-and-pa prices and service? Look no further than Jim's American Chinese Restaurant at 8069 San Miguel Canyon Road, Prunedale, just behind Burger King. Stephen Lowe, master chef and co-owner of Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, brings to Prunedale his 35 years of experience in cosmopolitan San Francisco. Stephen serves traditional American and Chinese dishes with subtle, delicious French and Italian influences. Jim's has great meals for $10 to $15. For extraordinary food to die for and prices that won't dent your budget, make it a point to visit Jim's American Chinese Restaurant in Prunedale. Jim's is open Monday through Saturday, 11 to 9, and Sundays, noon to 9. At Jim's, you can dine in or take out. And catering is also available. Call 663-4888. That's 663-4888. To make reservations at Jim's American Chinese Restaurant, call 663-4888.
And if you can't get enough of the Peter B. Collins thing, I'll be live on Air America Friday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, 11 to 1 Eastern, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific. I-9. nominate Bruce Springsteen to perform at an inaugural ball, and I request this song. Kids asleep in the backseat. We continue with Robert Perry here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Lines open if you want to join us, 888-5 Peter B. Bob, one of the things that I really appreciate about your work is that you often put complicated issues into context, both analytical and historical. And one of the things that you've raised during this election process continues to concern me, and that is what Obama will do about the law-breaking and unconstitutional behavior of the Bush administration. And as I said, you've written very powerfully about what Bill Clinton did, which was to give the Republicans a pass in the hope that they would work with him on the thorny issues like health care and the stimulus that he called an investment package early in his presidency. And it didn't work. He gave up something, and, well, he got Whitewater and the Arkansas Project in return, plus it ultimately led to the impeachment attempt. So what is your current thinking about Obama's posture toward investigating the wrongdoing of Bush and his appointees, and do you think that he'll try to do a move on?
Well, I think there's a real question there, and it's a very troubling one. We don't really know yet. I've been keeping an eye on some of the talk amongst his people that are supposedly in line for key jobs. I got a call last night, actually, from someone who was with one of the – I'm not going to go into details. I haven't reported this yet, but there was a person who may be in line for a top White House job at the National Security Council who was – discussing at a party how we must move on and it's bad for the country to try to hold people accountable for the torture and the war crimes, et cetera. And if that becomes the concept of that Obama follows, then I think the country will be badly served for it. But we don't know yet. There is a strong element of the Democratic Party which will want to do exactly what Bill Clinton did. Bill Clinton put aside the Iran-Contra investigation, Iraqgate, the October surprise investigation. So much of that history that was crucial to understanding what had happened was lost. It was thrown away. In fact, it was falsely written in many cases. And Bill Clinton thought he could use that to get some, earn some chits with the Republicans. It didn't work out for him on any level. And we ended up 8 years later getting Poppy Bush's son as the president and all that's happened since. So it was not a smart move, and it wasn't the right move. And Obama's going to be tempted by some of the people around him, some of the supposedly wise heads among the Democrats, people like Lee Hamilton, who's one of his foreign policy advisors. Of course, he's older now, but won't be part of the administration probably, but is it one of the people who's been advocating, for instance, keeping Bobby Gates on as defense secretary despite Gates' history? Mm-hmm. Then you're getting people that feel that, oh, it's not, the country has so many problems, we can't get bogged down in what happened over the past 8 years. If that happens, and it's understandable why people might think that way, but we've seen some of the consequences. The American people are owed that information, and there should be accountability for serious crimes, war crimes, torture. The world expects that, and we should expect it as people. If we believe in the rule of law, if we believe in what we stand for, those kinds of violations should not just be swept under the rug.
Yeah. And I was disappointed. Tom Hartman had his weekly visit from Senator Bernie Sanders, the only real independent in the United States Senate. And a question from a caller produced an answer from Sanders saying, oh, we spent 8 years on Bush, and I don't want to spend another 4 years. And he did make the right noises about investigating the most egregious crimes. But I think the attitude is, we've got real big immediate fish to fry, and who cares? And I care deeply, because I believe that if we know the truth, that we will be able to prevent these abuses from happening in the future, and that we can attempt to restore constitutional rule here in the United States.
Right. And also, one has to expect the Republicans will try to do exactly what they did in 93 and 94. This is a party that's now been reduced more and more to an angry right-wing base. It's hard to envision them trying to somehow suddenly change their stripes. There are fewer and fewer moderates. Their media continues to be vicious and ideological. And I think when you put those things together, it's hard to see them doing much else than trying to replay what they did to Bill Clinton to Barack Obama.
Bob Perry, thank you very much. Just got word that Robert Byrd has stepped down as chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee. I guess he saw what Reid told Joe Lieberman yesterday and figured the fix was in. Bob Perry, thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.
All right. We'll talk about Georgia and Russia next, right here.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File. I'm Charles Osgood. Each week, for several years, I had the honor of sitting next to John Leonard on the CBS News Sunday morning set and introducing the man Kurt Vonnegut once called the smartest man who ever lived. We learned yesterday that John Leonard died Wednesday night.
Someone who expected so much of us as both readers and writers and artists. It is a tremendous loss for all of us.
David Edelstein, now the film critic on Sunday morning, was in awe of John Leonard, as we all were.
He could, as a critic, cascade among all kinds of influences, literature, history, movies, television.
More about John Leonard after this.
Guys, bigger is better. And right now at the men's store inside JCPenney, it's the biggest sale of them all. Everything is on sale. The entire men's department on sale. All the brands you trust, like Dockers, Levi's, St. John's Bay, Izod, Stafford. All shirts, pants, jeans, jackets, dress clothing, even socks and underwear. All of it. If you can wear it, it's on sale right now at the biggest sale of them all. The men's store makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
How to teach old Christmas lights a new trick. Step 1. Demand a 90% energy savings from your old lights. Step 2. Ignore their protests. Step 3. Go to the Home Depot this Saturday and Sunday only. Trade your old lights, working or not, for $3 off a strand of new LED lights that do use up to 90% less energy. Step 4. Think, hey, what a neat trick.
The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid November 8th and 9th in U.S. only. Limit 5 per customer. See store for details.
John Leonard's liberal philosophy was often manifest in his criticism, but he was a dear friend and colleague, and he did it with such joyous erudition that it was dazzling. David Edelstein.
He constantly worried that our intellectual culture was being, if not dumbed down, then intellectually coarsened, that you couldn't expect the viewer to pay close attention and to follow you.
In this age of 7-second sound bites, I want you to hear 39 seconds of pure John Leonard.
Mugwumps in the sacred grove of literature complain that the personal computer is bad for writing. That because of some keyboard logorrhea, books get longer, prose gets sloppier, and nobody can spell anymore. On the eve of the 21st century, let me be more optimistic. As an erstwhile magazine editor, I can tell you that nobody's been able to spell since 1968. As the husband of a high school teacher, I also know that the prose of her students actually improved since they started writing on computers, submitting drafts to their peers for editing, revising their papers in minutes instead of days, and having fun fiddling.
Smart as he was, John Leonard had at least one very dumb habit. For too many years, he smoked too many cigarettes. His death at age 69 was from complications of lung cancer. The Osgood File, Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
The
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Thanks for joining us today on the Peter B. Collins Show. Back in August, when the world was focused on the Beijing Olympics, a conflict developed between Russia and its former Soviet republic, Georgia. We're going to take another look at that because there's fresh reporting from the New York Times about the origins of that conflict.
Did the fight to make ends meet? Keep the man up on his feet. Holding down his job. And it surely can't be fought. Who takes every can't be fought? Make one life about it.
As I mentioned, Friday's New York Times has a front-page story detailing new information from witnesses who were there on August 7th of 2008 about the origins of the conflict between Georgia and the much larger Russia. Alexander Melikashvili joins us again on the program today. He's a research associate at the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies. And he has been following nonproliferation issues in the former Soviet Union and knows quite a bit about this region. Alexander Melikashvili, welcome to the program today.
Thank you, Peter. Good to be with you.
It's nice to talk with you, sir. And I would imagine that you read with interest the coverage in the New York Times about more details about the hours that developed there, starting about 3 o'clock in the afternoon local time on August 7th in Georgia and the South Ossetia region that is kind of a breakaway republic.
Oh, most definitely. I read it with a lot of interest. Well, pardon my cynicism, but first of all, let me just say that the publication of this article I attribute to changing editorial guidelines at the major U.S. news outlets, including the New York Times. I think that with the advent of the Democrats, there will be more articles critical of Saakashvili's handling of the conflict in South Ossetia. The timing of the publication is indeed peculiar, as it coincided with the opposition demonstration in Tbilisi on the one-year anniversary of the violent dispersal of similar opposition demonstration on November 7, 2007. And to be honest with you, I don't believe in these sort of coincidences.
Okay. So if it's not a coincidence, what does it mean, Alexander?
Well, I will leave it up to your listeners to decide. But let's discuss actually what are the facts that S.G. Chivers, whom I respect a great deal, is writing about. Well, he bases most of his article, most of the narrative, on the observations of the three-member group of OSCE monitors who were in the conflict zone on August 7 and 8, as you correctly point out.
And let me just identify that OSCE stands for the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, and this was a multinational group essentially there to monitor the situation. And for some years now, there have been peacekeepers, including Russian forces called peacekeepers, in portions of territory claimed by Georgia, but we're mostly talking about South Ossetia in this case.
Right. Actually, to explain even a little bit further for listeners, in accordance with the ceasefire that was brokered by Moscow in early 90s, there was a three-part peacekeeping force there. There was a part that consisted of Russian peacekeepers, part that consisted of Georgian peacekeepers, and part consisted of North Ossetian peacekeepers, which is 500, 500, and 500. And so 1,500 people.
Okay.
But going back to the article, this was a group of OSCE monitors. There was three of them, Finnish major, Belarusian airborne captain, and a Polish civilian. And basically, they insist that Tbilisi's claim about the shelling of the Georgian villages, which was used as a formal pretext for the subsequent large-scale operation against the South Ossetian separatists was false. Well, what I want want you to take into account is that when you read the article, you discover that two of the Georgian villages, which Tbilisi claimed came under fire, were indeed located near the OSCE observer's office in Khinvali.
Mm-hmm.
However, the other two villages were not. So I ask you, how is that possible for the three OSCE monitors to claim that these other two villages, which were not geographically close, were not under the fire? And actually, Chivas writes himself that the residents of the Zemonigozi village stated they were under heavy fire on that day from 6 o'clock onwards, which actually supports the Georgian claim. So there are obvious inconsistencies in the account.
Well, I do understand inconsistencies, and I will be the first to admit that I wasn't there. But, Alexander, based on this reporting in the New York Times, there were discoveries starting at 3 p.m. the August 7th afternoon there of large numbers of Georgian artillery and rocket launchers that were being assembled north of Gori and just south of the town that we're talking about. And then about 6 o'clock, the monitors were told by Russian peacekeepers of Georgian artillery fire, I think on the village you were referring to that's not right close by, and that's Ketagurovo, is that right?
Ketagurovo, that's right.
This report was not independently confirmed, says the Times, and Georgia declared a unilateral ceasefire shortly thereafter, about 7 p.m.
That's correct.
Then later that evening, Georgia announced that Georgian villages were being shelled and declared an operation to restore constitutional order in South Ossetia. Now, this is where it gets a little complicated, because Russia claims it was responding to the provocation of the events around 6 p.m. Is that correct, in your view?
I don't think that's correct. I don't think that's correct. I mean, in addition to this, you have to also take into account the context in which Chivas is writing about the observations of the OSCE monitors, because these observations were apparently incorporated into two confidential briefings that were given to the Western diplomats in Tbilisi in August and October. Now I ask, why, if OSCE had this information, why didn't they release it earlier? Why was it not shared with the public? And actually, we only know only part of the Chivas quotes, but we don't know the full extent of their report. It would be very helpful to know full extent of the report, but for whatever reason, OSCE did not give the right to Chivas to interview, for instance, the three monitors. I don't know why.
Mm-hmm.
Again, there are quite a few questions about the entire account. Then there is also a question about the role of the Captain Ryan Grist and the Wing Commander Stephen Young, the British.
Right.
And,
so Grist is a former British Army captain who was a senior OSC representative in Georgia. And
that's right.
He disputes Georgia's account of the events. He said he was in constant contact that night with all sides and the office in Skinvali and with Wing Commander Stephen Young, who you just referred to. Here's a quote from Grist. It was clear to me that the attack was completely indiscriminate and disproportionate to any, if indeed there had been, any provocation. The attack was clearly, in my mind, an indiscriminate attack on the town as a town. You think that that's incorrect? You don't agree with the observations of Ryan Grist? Is that it?
Well, I would like to take his observation with a grain of salt, because he was on the phone with all sides in the conflict, as he says. But one thing is being on the phone in constant communication with people on the ground, and another matter is to be on the ground and with the combat as it unfolds. So I take it with a grain of salt. Then there is a question of his resignation under what Chivas describes as unclear circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
There are quite a few gray spots in the entire story. Other than the observations of his three subordinates, my question is, what else did he know that led him to basically deny the Georgian claim? Quite a few questions, you know, and I would love to see an independent inquiry by qualified experts into the entire matter of August events, which is something that that Tbilisi actually called for, and it can be done under the aegis of Council of Europe, or it can be done under the aegis of OSCE, it will be definitely very helpful.
So, Alexander Melikashvili, tell me, independent of this New York Times account, what is your sense of what occurred on August 7th? Who started this conflict?
Well, I'll be very honest with you and blunt as well. It's very difficult to say. I don't want to sound cliche, but everything right now is basically under the this proverbial cloud, as in Clausewitz, is when war starts, it's very difficult to figure out what actually takes place.
Mm-hmm.
However, Georgian armed forces definitely committed certain violations. For instance, I refer to November 4th report by, if I'm not mistaken, Human Rights Watch, that talks about the use of a particular type of munition in heavily, densely populated areas. And I'm referring to Srinwali, and this is something that that has been documented. So that's one example. In other words, there were mistakes done by all sides, you know, and, you know, one of the things that I can clearly refer you to is the largest Georgian village in South Ossetia,
mm-hmm.
Kamarasheni, has been more or less bulldozed since then, ethnically cleansed, and recent visit by a Moscow mayor, Lushkov, who sort of acts like this informal propaganda and foreign policy minister of Putin's. He vowed to build a Moscow Moscow city there for mm-hmm. the South Ossetian.
Mm-hmm. So, Alexander, I think you can appreciate that I do not pretend in any way to be an expert on Russian or Georgian issues. My concern is the role of the United States in responding to this conflict. And my first real concern was the McCain campaign, with Randy Scheuneman's close ties as a former lobbyist for Saakashvili and the nation of Georgia. And so, you know, right out of the box, I was concerned about collusion between the Bush White House and the McCain campaign to turn this into a political moment to help John McCain get elected. And I've also been concerned that the Obama campaign didn't really offer a distinct point of view regarding the origins of the conflict. They had a slightly nuanced, different approach about what America's response should be. But it appeared, I spoke to Susan Rice, the one of the advisors to Obama on national security issues, and I found that there wasn't much difference between her sense and the sense coming from both the White House and the McCain campaign. So my big issue here is that I don't want to see the United States further alienate Russia if, in fact, this was a provoked situation, and I make no excuses. I believe Russia overreacted to, even if the initial provocation justified a response on their part, they didn't have to devastate every military base in Georgia and really run roughshod over the country. That said, my big concern, again, is America's posture and not getting drawn in to taking sides here in a what is a relatively local matter.
I think your position is perfectly understandable, and I think it's compatible with the position of the majority of Americans. And you are absolutely correct when you refer to the sort of the difference in positions of two presidential campaigns. You're right, McCain actually early on in the conflict stated, even went as far as to say that we are all Georgians at one point.
Yeah.
And you're right. However, I'm very far from thinking that there was some sort of a collusion. Actually, Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin referred to it, and he actually speculated with regard to the conflict being sort of a facade for pushing a Republican another Republican presidency on Americans. This is sort of a domain of conspiracy theories, and I do not subscribe to it. But I would say that Obama's campaign had a very sort of a balanced and very cautious response to it, and I think it was justified by the events. Right now, the situation is such that the State Department is focused mostly on the reconstruction and what's recently been termed as a smart aid. In other words, to help the country, because, you know, according to the estimates of the Georgian government, the Georgian economy was damaged by $2 billion. And recently, under the aegis of the United States and the European Union, there was a big donors conference in Geneva, at which, even though there is a global economic crisis, more than 67 countries took part in 13 international organizations, and they pledged $4.5 billion
That's right.
in economic assistance and in reconstruction, so on and so forth. So I think it's important right now to focus on the reconstruction of the country. And I think in this regard, Obama's administration will continue a policy of sort of a cautious, but at the same time, support towards the economy of Georgia, towards the reconstruction of the infrastructure, and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But
well, and we'll try to do you a big favor and not send Halliburton, okay? We need to take a break. Alexander, we'll return in just a moment. We're talking with Alexander Melikashvili. We're talking about the situation in Georgia. Fresh reporting from Friday's New York Times about the origins of the conflict between Georgia and Russia this past August. Alexander is with the James Martin Center for Nonproliferation Studies, and we'll continue in just a moment. Your calls are welcome at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. The Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540. Visit our website at KRXA540.com.
Ever thought about shipping your child to a remote island? Want to send them to their room for the rest of their life? I can help. I'm Mark Lecluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Dr. Chaim Barton. For the past 10 years, I've been helping parents, teens, and kids overcome challenges in their lives, and I'd like to help you too. I can work with your family to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection. I offer an affordable sliding scale and am currently accepting new clients. Please call for an appointment. 831-818-4033. Parenting doesn't have to be so hard. I'm Mark Lecluse. Give me a call. 818-4033. That's 818-4033.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Hello, everybody. This is R.J. Moyet. Join me Sunday nights from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. for Sports Phone KRXA. Now all of us Monday morning quarterbacks can get together Sunday nights and talk about football, baseball, basketball, tennis, golf, hockey, softball, volleyball, kickball, bocce ball, bowling, rugby, lacrosse. Well, maybe we won't talk about rugby and lacrosse, but join me anyway for Sports Phone KRXA, Sunday nights from 6 p.m. until 7 p.m.
About Georgia.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player."
Well, thank you, Charlie Daniels. And we will be talking about the American state of Georgia a little bit later today. There's some serious election issues lingering from Tuesday's vote, and Brad Friedman will have that for us. Right now, we're talking about the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, an independent nation that is in a critical location in the Caucasus, with oil pipelines going through there that are also natural gas pipelines critical to Europe and other portions, including the Ukraine, portions of the former Soviet Union. And in Friday's New York Times, a new look at what led to the conflict and kind of a sequence of events report based on observers who were there. These are peacekeepers from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe. And our guest, Alexander Melikashvili, is skeptical of these new reports that we're hearing, both due to the timing and also some of the essential elements that they are reporting. We're joined now by Dave, listening on KGOE in Eureka. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, Peter. And Alexander, it's now known that Karl Rove had made a visit to Georgia shortly prior to this incident breaking out. And there are those of us who find the whole Bush administration to be guilty of multiple capital offenses, and it wouldn't be beneath them to instigate another world conflict if it might benefit them politically or monetarily in any way. That's the suspicion that some of us hold to.
All right. We'll air that out, Dave. I'll just offer one minor correction. Karl Rove did meet with Mr. Saakashvili, but I believe it was not in Georgia. He was reported to be meeting with Mr. Saakashvili on the day that he was asked to appear on Capitol Hill, and that meeting was the reason offered for his no-show. But, Alexander, it's true that leading Republicans have had close relationships with Mr. Saakashvili. And you don't have to be a total conspiracy theorist to think that perhaps the Republicans in this country were in some way encouraging Mr. Saakashvili or even perhaps manipulating him to produce something that they wanted.
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate on such a lofty subject, but I should say that, in fact, Georgia enjoys bipartisan support, and I refer and I am not aware of any visit by Karl Rove to Tbilisi, so I don't know what the caller was referring to.
I believe that he met Saakashvili in Malta, if I have the location correct, and it would have been in early July of this year.
I wouldn't rule it out, but with regard to my country, I would say that Georgia is enjoying bipartisan support, and I refer actually to the August events because the Vice President-elect Biden traveled there in the middle of August.
Yes, he did.
Not long after the conflict, actually the hot phase of the conflict was over. So I would say that as a budding democracy, however imperfect, Georgia enjoys bipartisan support. Although, of course, you know, through the prism of many, especially those who ascribe to conspiracy theories, you know, they view the entire wave of color revolutions as some sort of this grand scheme that was carried out partly by Soros and partly by CIA, mm-hmm. and in order to sort of instill liberal democratic regimes throughout the former Soviet Union. I tend to disagree with this point of view, but various permutations of this point of view persist, and they are actually a guiding rationale of politicians in Kremlin.
Alexander, just a minute remaining. I want to get your thoughts on one other not terribly closely related issue, and that is the kind of threat that came from Russian President Medvedev earlier this week essentially throwing down the gauntlet to President-elect Obama to back off from Bush's plan to put missile defense, so the phony Star Wars system, into Poland. And on the point of it, I agree with Russia that this is an unnecessary provocation, but I also don't like the tactic that Medvedev really unveiled in confronting Obama before he's even president.
Right. In his first address to the Federal Assembly, which is the a grand event in Russia, a day after Obama was elected to be the president of the United States, basically Medvedev threatened to position Iskander tactical missiles in the Kaliningrad region,
right,
to countervail the basically the planned anti-missile defense system in Czech Republic and Poland.
Right.
Well, I would say that I think it, the entire speech was more directed towards the domestic consumption.
All right, Alexander, thank you very much for joining us today. We're talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing: taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time. It's all done online. And it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation. That's 702-299-5789. Or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com. That's fit.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
President-elect Barack Obama holds his first news conference.
We are facing the greatest economic challenge of our lifetime.
It's the economy, and it's not good.
This isn't a mild recession. In fact, this is a full-blown recession.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Jim Taylor.
This morning we woke up to more sobering news about the state of our economy.
Like rising unemployment and more job cuts coming. President-elect Barack Obama holding his first news conference today.
I'm Peter Mayer in Chicago. President-elect Obama says the hardships confronting many Americans underscore the need for quick action to stabilize the financial sector.
The American people need help. This economy is in bad shape.
In his first news conference since the election, Mr. Obama said Congress must pass an economic stimulus measure before or right after he takes office. He also pushed a proposal the Bush administration opposes, a call to extend unemployment benefits. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Chicago.
CBS News Chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer says, yeah, we've heard about Mr. Obama moving on the economy and his cabinet.
He really did not tell us or give us very much of a hint of how quickly he intends to move. He said, when I have a cabinet treasury secretary to announce, I'll announce it. Time and again, he kept saying, when I get to that, we'll do it. But we didn't find out very much today.
Now this.
How to deck your halls without blowing your budget. Step 1. Go to the Home Depot. Step 2. Get what you need to update your home for the holidays for less. Paint, lights, area rugs, and more. Because the Home Depot has new lower prices on over 1,000 items throughout the store. Step 3. Have a happy, happy holiday.
Prepare your home for the holidays and get special deferred financing store-wide with your Home Depot consumer credit card. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through November 12th in U.S. only. See store for details.
The best stuff is always in the back. Like when you go into a store and you want the best, you ask the clerk what he's got in the back, right? So when it comes to getting what's best for your Buick, Pontiac, or GMC, head to your participating dealer and drive around back to their Good Wrench service lane. Right now it's Good Wrench and Go Time, where you can get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Good Wrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. And while you're there, have them check your tires. Should you need them, they can recommend the proper tires for your vehicle. Good Wrench and Go. We're keeping it simple. Offer ends November 30th.
240,000 jobs lost. This is economist Nigel Galt.
The economy lost 240,000 jobs last month, and the unemployment rate went up to 6.5%. That's higher than the worst unemployment rate that we had during the last recession.
I'm Mark Mueller at the White House, which blames the big jump in joblessness on tight credit and the mess in the housing markets. But Press Secretary Dana Perino says the administration has the tools to solve both problems. She says government programs will improve the flow of credit and spur economic growth and job creation.
The announcement today from the East Coast upscale grocery chain Wegmans.
The economy faces some tough times today. The good news is that oil and grain prices are falling.
We're happy to announce that Wegmans is lowering important prices in anticipation of these lower costs.
Some price cuts up to 30%. Does seem like everyone has less cash, even General Motors.
GM's essentially running on fumes when it comes to operating cash. The company says it will reach minimum levels later this year and dip below that early next year. IHS Global Insight analyst John Wilkonowicz says GM needs help now.
The option really is that the government can you know, pull a rabbit out of the hat and get them some money very quickly.
GM and Ford both cutting white-collar jobs today, with GM also laying off about 3,600 manufacturing workers. Jeff Gilbert, CBS News, Detroit.
Auto workers reeling with today's news. David Stevenson's a Ford retiree in Dearborn.
It's as worse as been. I mean, I've been through the cycles of layoff and stuff like that, 30 years, but no, not like this.
He's the longest-serving senator in United States history, Senator Robert Byrd.
In this internet-savvy, media-infused culture, we have forgotten that people do get older. Even, dare I say it, old.
Those words spoken on the Senate floor last year. Today, the 90-year-old head of the Appropriations Committee says he'll step down in January. Senator Daniel Inouye will take his post. Paloma, getting stronger. Near the Cayman Islands, the storm now a Category 3 hurricane.
Flooding associated with the rain is going to be a big problem.
Dave Roberts, National Hurricane Center, talking about 150-mile-an-hour winds.
The rain is going to be pretty substantial. As it stands right now, there's a good possibility of up to isolated 15 inches.
You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Hi, I'm Peyton Manning. What could be better than the Gear Up with Sony HD sales event? I'm not sure, but I'll try to top it by handing out some of my own gear. Hey there, little fella.
Hi, Mr. Manning.
How about a practice jersey?
But, Mr. Manning, it's so wet.
Why, yes, little fella. Yes, it is.
Ew.
Well, looks like Gear Up with Sony HD is the best way to go. Save $300 when you buy a Bravia HD TV and Blu-ray disc player together.
I don't think I want this.
Bring it out. It's just a little sweat.
It's gross.
Now through November 8th, save $300 when you purchase a qualifying 46 or 52-inch diagonal Sony Bravia HD TV and select Sony Blu-ray disc player together. Whether you're watching the game or watching a movie, the best way to experience HD just got even better. To learn how you can save $300 on a Sony Bravia HD TV and Sony Blu-ray disc player, visit a participating Sony dealer or sony.com/HDNA.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
And the Peter B. Collins Show is available by the slice. We call them podcasts in audio verbiage. And if you don't do podcasts, well, call them archived audio files, and you can listen on your computer. But however you like to do it, all of our programs are recorded and available to be listened to later by you or someone you care about. The links are on my homepage at peterbcollins.com. Later this hour, we're going to go to the land of Lincoln, that's Illinois, and talk to somebody who doesn't really have a favorable opinion of Rahm Emanuel. One of the first picks by President-elect Obama, Rahm Emanuel, Democratic congressman from Chicago, former Clinton White House advisor to chief of staff in the Obama White House, And Christine Segelis will tell you her beefs with Rahm Emanuel coming up later this hour. Robert Dreyfus returns to our program today. He is a longtime investigative reporter. He writes about national security and foreign policy. And he is the proprietor of the Dreyfus Report, which is a blog available at the website of The Nation magazine. That's at thenation.com. Bob, how are you doing today?
I'm great. How about yourself?
I'm holding up all right.
Good.
Now, I didn't get to see Mr. Obama's news conference today, but I did scan a transcript of it. A lot of talk about the economy, a lot of talk about a puppy, and I do have a recommendation there. The Bedlington Terrier is a nice hypoallergenic dog, and two of my brothers have Bedlington Terriers, so that's my recommendation to the Obama family. But he was asked a couple of questions. He ducked a question about the security briefings, the intelligence briefings that began on Thursday for the president-elect. And there was a brief exchange about the overture that came from the president of Iran, Ahmadinejad, congratulating Mr. Obama on his election. And Obama kind of reverted to campaign lingo. In fact, he quoted himself from the campaign in asserting his current position toward Iran. What do you think about this overture from Ahmadinejad? I believe it's the first time since the hostage crisis that we've had that kind of exchange on the event of an American election.
Well, in terms of the election, yes, although I should remind you that it was a couple of years ago that Ahmadinejad wrote a long 8-page letter to President Bush, which kind of meandered all over the place and asked President Bush to convert to Islam or something like that.
I tried to read it.
Yeah. I think this is in a different category, though, because it was clearly an effort by Iran to reach out to Obama in a positive way. And to say, you know, we're open to a dialogue with you. Now, that certainly doesn't mean they're open to surrendering on all the issues that stand in the way of U.S.-Iran relations. And Obama mentioned today a couple of them, being the nuclear research program and also Iran's support for militant groups around the region, not least of all in Iraq, but also in Lebanon and Palestine and so forth. So I think it's an important start. And clearly Obama has spent the entire campaign saying that he would, in fact, open up such talks. We had yesterday the foreign minister of Israel saying the exact opposite, however, saying that it's a bad idea to engage in talks with Iran and that it would convince the Iranians that that you know their position so far is a winning hand. So I think clearly the Israelis threw down a marker, saying we're not going to accept this kind of overture. And I think that's just one indication of kind of the tangle or thicket that President Obama is going to face when he starts to look at this whole region.
Let me just read a couple of quotes from your blog post here, and you're quoting the New York Times translation of Ahmadinejad's letter to Obama. I congratulate you for attracting the majority of votes in the election. As you know, opportunities that are bestowed upon humans are short-lived. People in the world expect war-oriented policies, occupation, bullying, deception, and intimidation of nations, and imposing discriminatory policies on them and international affairs, which have evoked hatred toward American leaders, to be replaced by ones advocating justice, respect for human rights, friendship, and non-interference in other countries' affairs. They also want the U.S. intervention to be limited to its borders. That's an interesting use of language. One doesn't intervene inside its own borders, but that's interesting. Anyway, especially in the sensitive region of the Middle East, it is expected to reverse the unfair attitude of the past 60 years to restore the rights of people in Palestine, Iraq, and Afghanistan. Well, these are understandable comments and certainly less inflammatory than the kinds of things than we've heard from Mahmoud Ahmadinejad in the past.
Yeah, no, it was a very flowery and nicely worded letter, and you can't disagree with too many of those sentiments, talking about an end to the bullying. And clearly he was trying to draw a contrast between the Bush approach to the world, which was, you know, both muscular and unilateral in terms of the use of American force. So he's hoping that that policy will change. And that's something, by the way, that I think it's not just Iran, but probably dozens of countries around the world are crossing their fingers and hoping that the new administration adopts a radically different view of how American power ought to be used. So I think, yeah, it's a hopeful sign. And even though Obama didn't respond to it today directly, he didn't also dismiss it, which I guess you'd have to consider a hopeful sign as well.
Yeah, he said it in due time. He'll respond to the letter.
Right.
So that's interesting.
And he made the point that, you know, he's not the president. And that's an important thing to underline, that he can't be 2.5 months before being sworn in, you know, starting negotiations with a foreign head of government. So, you know, he's got to be very careful about not appearing to be stepping into the White House before January 20th.
Mm-hmm. And Bob Dreyfus, before we move on from Iran, have we reached the point of zero probability of a Bush administration military attack of any kind on Iran in the lame duck days here?
Well, I would never say it's zero, but I think it's extremely unlikely. Of course, you know, I've been saying that for quite a while because...
Well, and so far, you're right.
Well right, but it isn't zero. But I think it's very unlikely because I think given the fragility of the world economy and the resulting impact of an attack on Iran on oil prices, that would be devastating. Given the vulnerability of our forces in Iraq and elsewhere in the region, Afghanistan, to an Iranian counterattack, which would be asymmetric, I think that makes it unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, above all, it's difficult to see what the objective of it would be. The United States, as you know, a year ago issued an intelligence report declaring that Iran had halted its nuclear weapons program. And so far, at least, we haven't reversed that assessment. So it would be very difficult for the United States to say we're attacking Iran, even though we've just said they're not building a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
So all of these things really make it very difficult for the Bush administration to go to war against Iran. of course, there's always also the wild card of Israel launching an attack, but many people who've looked at that said it's extraordinarily difficult for the Israelis to do anything more than a symbolic attack, but not a strategic one.
Well, Bob, I'm very pleased that you are correct on this and have been so far, and I hope it stays that way. Next, I want to talk about the greeting that came from a different foreign leader about Obama's victory, and that's President Medvedev. I got practice pronouncing his name yesterday. Medvedev of Russia. And he threw down a kind of gauntlet to Obama, challenging him to back away from the Bush administration's commitment, which has now been funded by Congress, to build one of these flaky Star Wars systems and deploy it in the Czech Republic and, most notably of concern to Russia, in Poland. And while I'm sympathetic to the Russian position, I do believe that Bush and Cheney have been unduly provocative in promoting this Star Wars deployment. At the same time, I thought the way Medvedev confronted Obama in this very formal press conference in Moscow was unfortunate.
Well, you know, there's no question that the Russians are feeling a little uppity and have used the crisis in Georgia to start to maybe reclaim some of their regional influence, not only in that small country, namely Georgia, but elsewhere in some of the former Soviet republics and pushing toward Eastern Europe and extending their influence into countries like Syria and Iran and maybe Central Asia. So there's a an argument to be made that under Putin and Medvedev there's a kind of resurgence going on, and it's something that Obama is going to have to deal with. But it seems to me eminently doable diplomatically,
mm-hmm.
for the United States and Russia to put their relations back on an even keel. That would depend, however, on Obama probably making a gesture like freezing that missile deployment,
mm-hmm.
Which, of course, hasn't happened yet.
Right.
And perhaps undoing his plan, and this would be trickier for him, for extending NATO to include Ukraine and Georgia,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, perhaps other countries. Today I saw some conservatives saying that we should include India and Japan in NATO. So there's a you know, fertile ground for improved U.S.-Russian relations, and mm-hmm. I guess I wouldn't go so far as those people who said this was some test of Obama, because it was really just a restatement of mm-hmm. Russia's long-stated existing concerns about that particular problem.
But he did amp things up by threatening to deploy Russian missiles along the Polish border, so that was a little bit of dialing up the pressure.
Yes, that's true.
We need to take a break. We'll return with Robert Dreyfus and talk about some of the people likely to populate the Obama administration in national security, the Secretary of State, and other positions. We'll pick up there as we continue in just a moment. It's the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale. Listen to my show every Saturday from 3 to 5 p.m. 2 hours of in-depth talk on effective ways to help us get through life's greatest challenges, whatever the crisis. Addictions, illness, fears, breakups, money problems. I'll bring in the expert guests and we'll do it with some humor. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Sun Street Centers. For alcohol and drug treatment, go to www.sunstreetcenters.com.
Come here, Max. What's wrong?
Ruff.
What?
Ruff.
Oh, I get it. A rough day?
Ruff, ruff.
Hi, I'm Dr. Annetta Richmond inviting you to Natural Veterinary Therapy in Pacific Grove, the peninsula's new holistic veterinary medicine clinic featuring a wide variety of natural treatments and remedies for common ailments. We also specialize in acupuncture, chiropractic, and physical rehabilitation using an underwater treadmill. Natural Veterinary Therapy, Lighthouse Avenue between 14th and 15th in Pacific Grove. Our environment is unique. Clients comment on how calm and caring it is for their pets and themselves. At Natural Veterinary Therapy, our goal is to help your pet heal from within. So think for yourself and think for your pets. Visit our website at naturalveterinarytherapy.com. Or call 655-0501. That's 655-0501.
Meow. Whiskers, I'd better call Dr. Richmond for you, too.
Meow, meow. This Friday, November 7th, 8 p.m., it's an all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour coming to the Columba Jazz Center in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, where people don't have opinions, they have convictions, mostly misdemeanors. Santa Cruz, where you can have Reiki performed on your car during an oil change. Santa Cruz, a city so progressive people debate whether or not breast milk is vegan.
Richard Stockton here to tell you we're going to be talking about happiness. This Friday, November 7th, yoga instructor in high heels and lipstick, comedian Vanda Mikulowski, Hindu comedian Daya, comedian Mickey Joseph, sound effects master Sven Davis, the Planetoid Band, the Outpatient Players, all at the Kawumba in Santa Cruz this Friday, November 7th, 8 p.m. Tickets $18 in advance, $23 at the door. Get your tickets at Santa Cruz, at Streetlight Records or Gateways Books, or go online, planetcruz.org. You're going to laugh your glutes off.
Good afternoon, everyone. This is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on San Miguel Canyon Road at Route 12, a big rig trailer has lost its load of broccoli and is blocking the lane, so watch out there. Moving on up to Santa Cruz, on Soak Hill Drive at Sunset Way, there is a traffic hazard. CHP is currently on the scene there. In weather, today is mostly sunny, highs are around 70. Tonight is going to be mostly clear with lows in the mid to upper 40s. Sunset is at 5:04 p.m. Here are some temperatures for this afternoon. King City is currently 76 degrees and sunny. Monterey is 63 degrees and clear. Salinas is 69 degrees. Watsonville is 76. Santa Cruz is 68. And Gilroy is 72 degrees. That's your traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great afternoon. The Peter B. Collins Show will be right back.
And the Peter B. Collins Show rolls on. A shout out to our weekend listeners in Portland, Seattle, and beautiful Missoula, Montana. Great to have you listening. Give me some feedback. Drop an email to Peter at peterbcollins.com. We continue now with journalist Robert Dreyfus. Again, you can read his almost daily dispatches at thenation.com. Click on the blogs link on the homepage and then scroll down and look for the Dreyfus Report. Bob, a lot has been discussed here, and in just 10 minutes we're going to talk about the first key appointment of Barack Obama, Rahm Emanuel, as his White House Chief of Staff. But there's been a lot of talk of postpartisan, bipartisan, whatever they want to call it. But the idea of holding over, for example, Robert Gates as defense secretary and perhaps filling the cabinet with more than one non-Democrat, I'll put it that way. And what are you hearing, particularly about the national security team, in terms of who's angling for a job and who's got Obama's eye?
Well, you know, right now it's all at the rumor stage. I am concerned about these mentionings of all the Republicans, especially in the national security field, and that's for two basic reasons. One is that for so long we've heard the argument that, you know, Democrats can't be trusted to handle the security portfolio, that Democrats are weak on national security. So for Obama to hand that over to Republicans would seem to almost be conceding that argument, which is troubling. But also, this is a time when, especially given the economic crisis we have, that it might be a good idea to start cutting the defense budget. Barney Frank in the House has already talked about cutting the budget by 25%. I think that's very unrealistic, although it's a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly the Republicans who are you know, traditionally in bed with the Pentagon would certainly not be ready to start talking about cutting the defense budget, and that would be especially true if there were a Republican at the Defense Department. So I think he ought to be able to find any number of people, you know, from the Democratic side who could step into those jobs. And I think the larger problem is that Obama spent the entire electoral season proclaiming himself to be a hawk on defense in many areas except for Iraq. But, you know, talking about expanding NATO, expanding the military budget, getting tough in Afghanistan and so forth. So I hope that he now reverses that course, and that was what was good politics perhaps in an election season when you're running against the war hero. Now gives way to the reality that we have a huge bloated military budget, which could do with not only cutting out some of the fat, but some of the bone as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's certainly going to be an interesting process here going forward, and a lot of jockeying. Certainly progressives like me are piping up and saying, wait a minute, we thought you were the anti-war candidate, and to put a guy like Rahm Emanuel in as chief of staff, even though that's not really a foreign policy advisor position, here's a guy who was, you know, out there with Joe Lieberman, Evan Bayh, and all the Republicans cheerleading the president into this war. And so it's going to be a rough ride, I think, for people who had projected a lot onto Obama without critically thinking, well, you know, a lot of that wasn't actually affirmed. You sent the message his way, but what he sent back was just the very broad sense of, oh, yeah, change you can believe in.
Yeah, well, of course, Biden himself, the vice president-elect, voted for the war 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I think that Obama is definitely going to have to carry out on his policy of pulling out of Iraq, but he'll be running up against opposition not only from the Republicans, but from hawkish Democrats and the Washington Post and lots of other places. And I guess part of my concern now is that because the election was so overwhelmingly seen as a referendum on the economy,
mm-hmm.
and on the current economic crisis, that it's harder for Obama perhaps to claim that he has a mandate on the issue of Iraq,
yeah.
and that when he sits down with the generals and with the other people in the national security establishment, it's a little harder for him to say, yeah, look, I was, you know, the people overwhelmingly elected me because of my intention to get out of Iraq.
Robert Dreyfus, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
1.2 million. This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network. 1.2 million jobs lost so far this year. Unemployment now at 6.5%, and I've seen predictions it'll hit 8% next year. Even trips to Disneyland, happiest place on earth, are dropping. And if ever people needed to go to their happy place, it's now. This is the strangeness of the economic system. It's like being in a stampede. It makes no sense. Everybody knows it makes no sense, but nobody can stop it. Here's a headline I saw today in the Wall Street Journal. Banks have cash, but borrowers are reluctant. So, first the problem was the banks wouldn't lend because they didn't trust anyone, so businesses couldn't get credit and they started laying off people. And now, the banks do have cash to lend, courtesy of the government, and they're willing to lend it, but now businesses don't want to borrow it. They don't want to borrow it because they don't have enough customers, so they don't need to borrow it. And businesses don't have enough customers because their customers can't buy stuff without the jobs that they were laid off from for lack of customers. And yet, despite all these unemployed people, you just have to look around and see all sorts of work that needs to be done. Highways, schools, but all that stuff needs tax money, which the laid off employees can't afford to pay. So, we have a system that sends employable people home to watch TV, where they'll see news reports about all the undone work that nobody can afford to do. No wonder there are already three Impeach Obama groups on Facebook. He's been president-elect for 3 days and hasn't done a thing. Now this.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. And while many great wines come from California, when it comes to Pinot Grigio, the best comes from Italy. There you'll find the perfect growing conditions for creating the award-winning Cabot Collection, where Cabot Pinot Grigio gets its crisp, light taste and full fruit flavors. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. Pompey International, Boca Raton, Florida.
This is Dave Ross on the CBS Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we would like to personally invite you to experience why Monterey County food critics are raving about our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Could it be our fantastic one-of-a-kind specialty pizzas or huge calzones, such as the Jamaican Me Crazy, the White Sands Beach, the Veggin' Out, or the Wild Mushroom Dream?
Or could it be because we also offer delicious salads, sandwiches, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger?
Recently recognized as Local's Favorite, Best for Families, Most Creative, Big Screen and Big Eat, and we'll return to spend our own money.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with an ice-cold draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh-brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's Hawaiian ice cream.
That's A Pizza Paradise, located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina, or call 582-9149 or see us on the web at apizzaparadise.net.
That's A Pizza Paradise.
582-9149.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run. Here's Adam with a tip on running.
When you work out or run lately, have your knees and shins been hurting? How old are your shoes? A year? 2 years? The aches and pains could be your body's way of saying your shoes are toast. Running shoes usually last for around 400 miles worth of wear. If you average a few miles a few days per week, you're going to wear out those shoes in 6 to 8 months. Hi, this is Adam at Central Coast Running. Bring your old shoes in the store so we can see how they're doing. We'll let you know how much life they have left and perform a full gait analysis if it's time for a new pair. We don't want to sell you a pair of shoes if you don't need them, but we do want to help let you know if your shoes are good for you. Stop in and let us help keep you feeling good.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. Thanks for joining us today. Be sure to visit my website, peterbcollins.com. There's updated information on the link called You Can Help. Coming up next hour, Brad Friedman, Mr. Election Protection, will join us. And among other things, we're going to talk about that very close Senate race in Minnesota, where former progressive talk show host Al Franken is very close to securing Norm Coleman's Senate seat. And the irony is that Al Franken has always poo-pooed claims of stolen elections in Florida 2000, Ohio 2004. And either Al Franken remains in denial, or what we call a catharsis is underway. And just maybe, if he does win this contested Senate race, he might go to Washington and fight for meaningful election reform. We'll talk about that with Brad coming up next hour. Right now, I want to take you back and get some background information on Rahm Emanuel. Christine Sigelis ran for Congress in Illinois in 2004 and came very close to knocking off a Neanderthal Republican named Henry Hyde. He'd been there since the dark ages, and she came very close to defeating him. In 2006, Henry Hyde had a choice of running for re-election or retiring because he presumed he would be facing Christine Sigelis. Enter Rahm Emanuel, and now enter Christine Sigelis to take over the story because she knows much more than I do. Christine, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, thank you for all that you've put into electoral politics. I went to school in Chicago, and I know a little bit about Henry Hyde's suburban district there, and it was reliably Republican. It returned him, for 12
30
terms?
30 years.
Yeah, 15 terms.
Mm-hmm.
And you stood up, you stepped up, you organized, you came very close to defeating him in 2004, and in my view, you earned the right to run exclusively against him in 2006. But as we saw happen here in California, where the Democratic Campaign Committee interjected their favored candidates, often self-funded, more conservative people, against a number of progressives, Rahm Emanuel stepped in and really messed up your plans, didn't he?
He did, and it wasn't, as you said, it was a very concerted effort. It wasn't just me. It was across the country. You may be aware of some, but since we had an early primary and my story was out there, I got calls from across the country during the 2006 primary season of progressive candidates who were pushed out. And, you know, they'd call and say, well, what do I do? And I'd say, well, here's what you're up against, and, you know, you have to make the decision for yourself. But many of them did drop out. I'd say the vast majority of them dropped out because it is a very strong personal commitment to run up against the machine like that.
Yeah. Well, in arranging for you to join us today, they sent me a link to an article, and this was a fabulous piece that I want to recommend for our listeners. It's at truthout.org. It was published in the fall of 2007, and it was written by my former producer, Matt Renner, who is now one of the star reporters at truthout.org. And it details what you're hearing Christine Segalas tell us today. And, Christine, give us some details here on the crunch time when you learned that the Democratic leadership had decided that you were not the one to run for that open seat.
Well, you know, we had always known. When I first started running in 2004, the first thing I should say is that there had been many people who had tried to run against Henry Hyde, but they really didn't run. You know, they were named on the ballot. And when I decided to run, I decided to run. And many of the people in the district said to me, we will get behind you, but what usually happens is we work our hearts out for somebody, they lose, and then we never see them again. Promise us that you will stay with us, that you will at least run twice.
Mm-hmm.
So in 2004, I had made a commitment to the activists in the district to at least run twice. But obviously, when we came so close, and of course when Hyde retired, quite frankly, I was told in January of 2005, Ron would never get behind me. So I knew that break going into it. But he also didn't have anybody to back up until they found Tammy Duckworth. But
mm-hmm.
So, you know, we were also just running saying, well, you know, nobody else wants to step up to this because it's still a very Republican district and they would have to fight a very tough primary. When Tammy came into the race, sat down with my supporters, and I laid it out to them. As you know, I said, we're going to get hit with everything. And, I mean, it was everything. It wasn't just Rahm and Durbin and Obama, but it was John Kerry and Hillary Clinton and Max Cleland. You name it, we got it. And
Tammy Duckworth is a veteran who's an amputee, and I have respect for her, but to the extent that she was a tool or a foil of the Democratic leadership attempting to squeeze you out of the race, well, I don't admire her for that.
Well, so we had, you know, we knew what we were up against, and I told them that even if we were able to eke out a primary win, which we almost did, the DCCC would walk away from the race, mm-hmm. and we'd be on our own for the general. And I gave my supporters the choice. They were the ones I had the commitment to, and, a group of about a dozen of people who were sort of informally the board members of the campaign, if you will, and they wanted to fight.
Mm-hmm.
So they wanted to fight, and I told them that I would fight with them.
And so what happened in the primary?
Well, it was about 6 weeks before the primary, my entire campaign staff quit.
Oh, man.
Largely because they were told that they would have no future in Illinois politics if they continued to work for me.
And who delivered that message?
You know, I really don't know.
Yeah.
But, I've heard that it came from Durbin's office. I don't, you know, but it could have also come from Rahm.
Mm-hmm.
It's Chicago politics, you know, and they were basically saying, you know, get out or die. So they got out. And I guess they thought that would be the death blow, but Progressive Democrats of America, God bless them, sent in Kevin Spidell as an interim campaign manager, and he infused all this enthusiasm into the campaign, and literally it was such a close race that they couldn't call it the night of the election.
Mm.
It was like 10 o'clock the next morning before it was called.
Wow. And what was the vote count? How much did she win by?
She won by about 1,000 votes.
Oh, wow.
Which is about 2 votes per precinct.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, considering that besides the fact she had national media, which was free, but she had spent $1.5 million to my $300,000, we didn't do, and I just told you all of the celebrities that were coming in for her,
mm-hmm.
Didn't do too badly.
Yeah. Christine Segelis with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. And, Christine, just to put it, some faces on it, we have three progressives here in California who've been toiling in the proverbial vineyards. Charlie Brown is in a very tight race that is still undecided to succeed John Doolittle. He ran in 2006, came close. He ran again this year. They carpetbagged Tom McClintock in there. And as far as I know, it's still not a resolved situation. Then we had Jerry McNerney, who ran against Richard Pombo. And Pelosi and the DCCC at first had a hands-off approach. Then they inserted a guy named Steve Filson, who they thought would defeat McNerney. And with McNerney prevailed, and after Pete McCloskey, the Republican, had softened up Pombo's support, the Democratic Campaign Committee actually did put some support into McNerney's race, and he prevailed over Pombo. He actually won re-election this year, so he seems to be out of the woods.
Mm-hmm.
The third race is my friend Dr. Bill Durston over in Sacramento, who has been running against Dan Lundgren. And Durston came within 5 points this time. But once again, he had zero support from Pelosi and the DCCC. And so there's a pattern emerging here. Christine Jennings in Florida, who took on Vern Buchanan in that election where 18,000 electronic votes disappeared. They wouldn't give her a fair hearing before the House Administration Committee, and they have fudged that race. Then there's Clint Curtis, who got squeezed out in his attempt to defeat Tom Feeney. They put a self-funded centrist or a corporate Democrat in the race, and she actually won this year. So this pattern has emerged. And Rahm Emanuel is the architect, is he not?
Absolutely, and that is the thing that scares me the most. It shows me that Rahm Emanuel does not have a commitment to democracy with a small d. He is committed to putting people in that he either knows how they're going to vote or he knows how he can control them. And that is a very scary proposition given his new position.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it's not very popular to, you know, be critical of President-elect Obama, you know.
Oh, Christine, wait, hold that apology, okay? We do not protect anybody at any time on this program. You might be confusing us with maybe the Al Franken show.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you this, so that's the thing. I know it's not popular, but here's what I'm saying, is that, you know, we said the same thing after 9/11. We got to give the president some latitude. He needs to be given some latitude. You know, things are crazy right now. And people, the problem is that we are in such a hole, we cannot give President-elect Obama any latitude. We have to be vigilant, vigilant, vigilant. And it's the only way that we're going to get our country back.
Christine Segelis with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. If you'd like to offer a comment, feel free to join us toll-free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. Here's a listener who echoes the remark you just made, Christine. And this is Chris from Salinas, a longtime listener to our program. I will not give any politician a, quote, chance. I will hold Obama accountable from day one and do what I can to steer him in the right direction. Remember, we do not elect leaders. We elect public, quote, servants. The founders never talked of leaders. Unfortunately, he has surrounded himself with nothing but corporate elite, and this is not new. Any association with the DLC should tell you everything, but if that's not enough, just check out his transition team. I'm not going to be very surprised when he assembles his cabinet. If it walks like a corporatist, talks like a corporatist, well...
And I think that's, you know, what is concerning to me, and certainly the economic situation is a concern, but it also... Things that you should know about Rahm Emanuel is that he sat on the board of Freddie Mac during one of the highest scandals, although he was never actually convicted. You know, he was certainly part of that. He also really, you know, in order to get that board seat, he should have had some sort of investment banking, mortgage banking experience. And at the time, they accepted the fact that he had sat on some public housing board, and that was going to be enough. That's a little scary. I mean, you have to kind of wonder about following that. And he was elected himself by Mayor Daley sending out, Tomaszak is the person who actually did it, sending out workers on city funds to knock on doors for Rahm Emanuel.
Well, that's a tradition in Chicago.
Well, it is a tradition in Chicago. But, that's, you know, I know that we've been talking about, you know, Barack Obama surrounding himself with many different types of people. I'm hoping he gets past Illinois because the traditions in Illinois are not very good.
Well, the two promising members of his transition team are David Bonnier, a true progressive former congressman from Michigan who was the campaign manager for John Edwards in the primary this year, and Robert Reich, the former labor secretary in the Clinton the first Clinton term. But beyond that, it is mostly corporate types and people who were part of the Clinton team.
Yeah, and that's kind of, it is a concern. And like I say, there's a couple of things particularly there. Rahm Emanuel's stance on the war, he is probably the most hawkish on the Iraq war of any Democrat.
And, right, he was right up there with Lieberman and Evan Bayh on the Democratic side, giving aid and comfort to the Republicans.
Absolutely, and I think that's going to be part of, you know, that's the other thing that's very concerning to me. To me, it cancels out the message that Obama is going to swiftly end this war.
We're going to take a break and return. Your calls are welcome for Christine Segelis. She challenged Henry Hyde, and then she ran again in 2006, and Rahm Emanuel inserted Tammy Duckworth into the race, who defeated Christine and went on to lose in the general election. We'll pick up there as we continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Fia with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Taking a look at northbound Highway 1, just north of westbound Highway 68, there is a vehicle hanging off of the right-hand shoulder. CHP is on the way. On Crazy Horse Canyon Road at San Juan Grade Road, we have a big rig involved in a collision. There are no injuries. CHP is en route there. Next, on San Miguel Canyon Road at Route 12, a big rig has lost a load of broccoli, and they're trying to get that cleaned up right now. Moving up to the Hollister-Gilroy area on Highway 156 at Bixby Road, there is a traffic collision with no injuries. That's your traffic on AM 540. Have a great commute and enjoy this fabulous Friday afternoon. Stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly.
My name is R.J. Moyer, President of Family Heritage Management Services. I am a retirement specialist, and I protect my clients' money, and I can guarantee an income for life. We don't recommend stocks, mutual funds, or variable annuities. These are risky securities. With securities, you have unlimited upside, but you also have unlimited downside. Our clients do not lose money in negative markets. Do you have a multi-generational IRA? Why not? It's been your right since 2001. Don't let Uncle Sam be your biggest beneficiary because your banker or broker is sleeping at the wheel. Call us right now at 831-794-8485 to receive your free brochure. We will then set up your free IRA and retirement checkup in our Salinas location. Call 831-794-8485. It's a new market, and it's time for a change. Call 831-794-8485. If you transfer your IRA, 401k, or any of your retirement accounts today, we will add 10% to your full account value. $100,000 becomes $110,000, $400,000 becomes $440,000, $700,000 becomes $770,000. It's a new market. It's time for a change. Call 831-794-8485.
If you love KRXA 540, show your support for our radio station by placing a bumper sticker on the bumper of your vehicle. Click on the bumper sticker at KRXA540.com and think for yourself.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. Don't you hate it when they take a song you love and turn it into a TV commercial?
Maybe someday, say goodbye.
I don't know if it's Toyota, but a car company is running commercials about 0% financing with this song by The Fix. I have heard a clever one, though. Somebody bought the rights to the Tommy Two-Tone song, 867-5309, and I think it's a plumber or somebody. And they run the commercial with the song, and that's actually their phone number. So that one actually was kind of cool, but ripping off Led Zeppelin and The Fix for television commercials doesn't fit my taste. Christine Sigelis is with us. As you heard, she ran for Congress twice in Illinois, came close to defeating the longtime Republican Henry Hyde, and then because of that factor that she came so close, Hyde retired, and in the election for that, the Democrats, led by Rahm Emanuel, inserted Tammy Duckworth in the race, spent heavily against Sigelis, who lost narrowly in the primary, only to see Duckworth lose in the general election. And a call came in during the break, an unidentified listener, Christine, is comparing Rahm Emanuel to Roy Cohn. He, of course, was the longtime Republican activist and nasty guy, part of the McCarthy team, part of the Nixon team, and a self-loathing closeted gay man. Anyway, the caller said that sending dead fish, stabbing the dinner table with a knife, reminds causes him to compare Rahm Emanuel to Roy Cohn. Does that fit for you?
Well, he is a colorful character, let's put it that. But I had forgotten about the dead fish story. But, yes, he is. He has been known to show his temper. And I know that's one of the reasons people think he'll make a great chief of staff, is because he doesn't at all hold back. And mm-hmm. he will be a bulldog.
Yeah.
I just don't know if that's what we're looking for.
The common comparison we're hearing is good cop, bad cop. Obviously, Obama would be the good one. But
yeah.
Do you see that working?
I don't like it, because what I'm hearing when I think of that, I think, well, is that saying that Obama is going to not take responsibility for his decisions and, you know, have all of the dirty work done by Rahm and let Rahm take, you know, the fall for it,
mm-hmm.
and Obama being able to walk away and say, oh, well, you know, I didn't know that was happening. And that would be a very sad thing, sort of like the IVI IPO thing where he said, well, I didn't actually fill out that questionnaire when, you know, I'm here in Chicago. The people from the IVI IPO are my friends. And they said, he not only filled that out, but he talked to us. He did fill that out.
And what is that? I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, well, he filled out when he was running for state senator. He said he was very much against the death penalty. And, of course, the state senate district that he's from, that's a very important issue.
Mm-hmm.
But then when it got brought up in the general, in the presidential race, he said that a staffer filled it out.
I see.
He was for the death penalty.
Oh.
And, you know.
And what is his position?
He believes in the death penalty.
Oh. So he lied for the campaign.
Well, you know, that's the... It is, well, it, you know, he's done this with the FISA, although he couldn't weasel out of that one too much, because he did say he would not vote for a FISA that had telecom immunity, but then again, did.
Yeah, Obama did that, too. I'm still burned about that.
Yeah, no, and Obama did that with the IVI IPO thing.
Oh, I see.
That is Obama.
Oh, okay.
That.
I thought you were referring to Emanuel's position.
And that's why I say what I'm afraid of is that Rahm is going to give him an excuse to push off the unpleasant decisions to somebody else rather than take responsibility for mm-hmm. making those decisions himself.
Now, Christine, White House chiefs of staff typically last less than one term. It's a high turnover, high pressure job. Do you see any silver lining here that this kills Rahm's chances of becoming speaker, or at least slows him way down?
Yeah, and, you know, in truth, there is a silver lining to it, because, as you say, the chief of staff is very high pressure. Usually there is a high turnover. And it does get Rahm out of the House leadership, which I think is a great thing. And it gives us the opportunity to elect a more progressive congressman from Illinois in the 5th District. And, you know, we're all excited about that.
Mm-hmm. And I said we don't protect people, and I extend that to Nancy Pelosi. I've known her for many years, and I've disclosed previously that I worked on her campaign in 1996, and at the time I had a very high regard for her. She refers to the difficult political decisions, like whether to back a
a congressional candidate or not, as reptilian. She says you must be cold-blooded, and you can only support people who you know are going to win. What does the episode that you lived through say about Nancy Pelosi to you?
You know, I think that they are so kept in Washington that they don't understand the dynamics. To give you an idea, of course, as you noted, Tammy Duckworth lost in the general.
Mm-hmm.
The person who ran the next time, who was also picked by the D-Trip, lost by an even larger margin. But what's important here is that when I ran against Henry Hyde, who was a pretty powerful guy, I actually got more actual votes than either Tammy Duckworth or the person who ran this time, running either an open seat or a first-term congressman.
Mm-hmm.
What they didn't understand is who and what makes up some of these districts, because they're not there. These aren't the, and I think that's the problem, that they're just not opening up their eyes, that there is a possibility that that Democrats in, say, suburban Chicago are not the same as Democrats in Chicago itself,
mm-hmm.
or maybe Democrats in the San Francisco area.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We're a little different breed, and I don't think they have a good feel for us.
I also think just the whole history of Pelosi is about power. Her father was mayor of Baltimore, and she grew up in that zone. And it really disappointed me as she made calculation after calculation this year to extend the occupation of Iraq, give Bush more money than he asked for, cave in on FISA, cave in on offshore drilling. And all this was to take issues off the table so Democrats could win in the fall. And I guess we got to get a new table over there, put impeachment on it, put some critical issues back on it.
You know, I was thinking about that because I know that was also part of Ron's thing. He did not want the Democrats to push too hard to get out of Iraq in 2006, and they obviously didn't.
Yeah.
Because he was afraid that would ruin the chances of a president-elect for 2008.
Yeah. Christine, I'm out of time. Thank you very much. Christine Sigelis, great to talk with you.
Okay, thanks.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. President-elect Barack Obama holds his first news conference.
I'm Peter Mayer in Chicago. President-elect Obama says the country faces the greatest economic challenge in a lifetime, and he'll inherit it on January 20th.
I do not underestimate the enormity of the task that lies ahead. We have taken some major action to date, and we will need further action during this transition and subsequent months.
After meeting with economic advisors, the president-elect called for a new stimulus package. He also wants to extend unemployment benefits for people who can't find work. That will likely have to wait until after he takes office because President Bush opposes the idea. Peter Mayer, CBS News, Chicago.
At the news conference, asked if he'd sought the counsel of former president, Mr. Obama joked.
I've spoken to all of them that are living. Obviously, President Clinton. I didn't want to get into a Nancy Reagan thing about, you know, doing any seances.
A remark for which he called and apologized to Mrs. Reagan. Nation's unemployment rate bolting to a 14-year high of 6.5% in October, another 240,000 jobs cut. Far worse than economists expected. Stark proof that the economy is deteriorating. Like a lot of us, Detroit needs money. Now, WWJ reporter Jeff Gilbert.
Combined, GM and Ford went through more than $13 billion in cash over the summer, and as a business with high fixed costs, there's only so much that can be cut. Ford has larger cash reserves than General Motors, so it can survive longer without government help. GM says if nothing changes, it will run out of money early next year.
GM and other automakers urging a government bailout package, and soon. The longest-serving senator in U.S. history stepping down from his high-level post, a 90-year-old Robert Byrd, CBS News correspondent Howard Arenstein.
Last year, in a floor speech, Byrd defended his work performance.
The really lucky ones, and I almost count myself among them, get to be aged.
But as he approaches 91, Byrd says he's now ready to step down as chairman of the Appropriations Committee. Chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer says he's been in poor health.
There was a feeling that he simply couldn't handle the heavy responsibilities of this job.
Byrd says he'll stay on the committee, but in a statement and quoted the Old Testament, "To everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven." Howard Arenstein, CBS News, Washington.
Near the Cayman Islands, Hurricane Paloma getting stronger.
Some further strengthening is actually possible in the next 12 to 18 hours.
Dave Roberts, National Hurricane Center.
We've had an aircraft reconnaissance investigating the system this evening, and it suggests the data that we've received, this system has increased to a Category 3 hurricane. Maximum sustained winds are 115 miles per hour.
It's a horror scene in Haiti. Bodies being pulled out of a collapsed school. At least 30 people found dead in the wreckage. This is CBS News.
A wine is only as good as the vineyards it comes from. Now for Cabot, America's favorite Pinot Grigio, that means grapes grown in the foothills of Italy's Dolomite Alps. Experience our distinctive Pinot Noir, our award-winning Merlot, or the rich Cabot Riesling. So when you're looking for truly exceptional wine, choose the Cabot Collection.
The number one Italian wine in America, Cabot. Elevating life. The perfect pairing for your Thanksgiving celebration. Cabot Wine and Butterball Turkey. Imported by Pompey International, Boca Raton, Florida.
Guys, bigger is better. And right now at the men's store inside JCPenney, it's the biggest sale of them all. Everything is on sale. The entire men's department on sale. All the brands you trust, like Dockers, Levi's, St. John's Bay, Izod, and Stafford. All shirts, pants, jeans, jackets, dress clothing, even socks and underwear. All of it. If you can wear it, it's on sale right now at the biggest sale of them all. The men's store makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
It happened in Hyannis and Kennebunkport, San Clemente and Plains, Georgia. Now it's Chicago's turn.
With Obama buzz at a serious decibel level, those whose job it is to draw tourists to the city the president-elect calls home believe they can sell Chicago by dangling the Obamas in front of potential visitors. Kathy DeMonaco with the Chicago Convention and Visitors Bureau is making selling points of the places where the Obamas eat, shop, play, and relax.
People are really excited about the president-elect and his family being from Chicago, and we think it's going to have a real positive impact on tourism.
Forget Al Capone and maybe even Michael Jordan. The city has a new most famous Chicagoan. Mike Krauser, CBS News, Chicago.
People are signing a giant message board to President-elect Obama, words of thanks and encouragement. It's erected at the Lincoln Memorial by a global online activist group. The board also includes posted messages emailed from people around the world, nearly 200,000 folks sending messages from 200 countries. I'm Jim Taylor, CBS News.
How to deck your halls without blowing your budget. Step 1, go to the Home Depot. Step 2, get what you need to update your home for the holidays for less. Paint, lights, area rugs, and more. Because the Home Depot has new lower prices on over 1,000 items throughout the store. Step 3, have a happy, happy holiday.
Prepare your home for the holidays and get special deferred financing store-wide with your Home Depot consumer credit card. The Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. Valid through November 12th in U.S. only. See store for details.
The best stuff is always in the back. Like when you go into a store and you want the best, you ask the clerk what he's got in the back, right? So when it comes to getting what's best for your Buick, Pontiac, or GMC, head to your participating dealer and drive around back to their Goodwrench service lane. Right now, it's Goodwrench and Go Time, where you can get an oil change, tire rotation, and a Goodwrench multi-point vehicle inspection all in one package. And while you're there, have them check your tires. Should you need them, they can recommend the proper tires for your vehicle. Goodwrench and Go. We're keeping it simple. Offer ends November 30th.
Live.
from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. He's smart, funny, well-informed, opinionated, and mild-mannered, except when he's not. Welcome to Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show, beaming your way from San Francisco. Every week about this time, we check in with Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com about troubled elections. And we got problems, friends.
The devil went down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind because he was way behind and he was willing to make a deal.
Oh, yeah.
When he came across this young man sewing on a fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, boy, let me tell you what.
A guy with a fiddle would be one Saxby Chambliss.
If you care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil is due. I bet a fiddle of gold against your soul because I think I'm better than you. The boy said, my name's Johnny and it might be a sin.
Brad Friedman's kind of tired and wore out because he's been on the election protection watch all week long. Brad, how you holding up?
Oh, you know me. I'm doing just fine. A little ragged here, but perhaps there'll be some light at the end of the tunnel and we'll get some rest someday soon.
Although we still have a
bunch of elections that folks need to be concerned about, vigilant about, keep their eye on, and make sure that the person who received the most votes actually gets to win.
Well, we will take a mini tour, including Minnesota, Georgia, and Alaska, maybe a few other points of interest. But you referenced the light at the end of the tunnel, and I refer you to the cover of this week's New Yorker because it's a beautiful depiction of just that. And if you find it at a newsstand or online or get the magazine, it'll just give you a momentary thrill.
Well, now you've tempted me. Now I got to go. I got to go get it.
Well, you start with the cover and you stay for the cartoons.
Okay.
So, Brad, let's talk about Georgia, where Saxby Chambliss, we won't say defeated, he unseated Max Cleland 6 years ago in a nasty, dirty election that included allegations of manipulated voting machines, some really nasty television commercials that put Max Cleland, the war hero amputee, up on the screen with Osama bin Laden. And so it was a trashy race all the way around. And it appears that Saxby Chambliss is trying to hold on to his seat using some of the same methods.
Yeah, desperately trying to hang on to it in this race against his challenger, Jim Martin. Now, when Chambliss was able to unseat Cleland back in 2002, the state had just brought in these brand new touchscreen voting machines made by Diebold. They, along with Maryland, were the two first states to introduce these wholly unverifiable voting machines, such that when the results came back and showed Chambliss defeating Cleland, which was the opposite of what the polls had predicted, there was really nothing that could be done about it. You simply had to accept the results. Well, here we are 6 years later. We learned so much more about these machines, and of course, while state after state has begun to ban them entirely, Georgia is still delighted to use them, and these are the numbers that we've got to, you know, entirely rely on and just presume that they're correct.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, Chambliss did not receive more than 50% of the vote, as reported by Diebold. So there will be a runoff down there. They require a majority in Georgia for the Senate seat. So there's going to be a runoff scheduled for December 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult, though, because there's not much one can do to oversee these types of elections. At the same time, the turnout rate down there has been surprisingly low, given so much of what we know about the inflated registration numbers all across the country, the enormously long lines to vote in early voting in Georgia, at some places 10-hour waits. But at the same time, their new Diebold-made computerized registration system was regularly going down throughout the process. No surprise there, because they're e-poll books aren't any better than their e-voting machines. And you had Georgia Institute a new photo ID restriction that would also likely disenfranchise tens of thousands of voters. So it's a very close race. They're going to have another rerun at it, I suppose, December 2nd.
Mm-hmm.
And, people have to, fight to get people to turn out. But, again, at the end of the day, we're going to be stuck with whoever Diebold decides is the winner of the election.
And the turnout issue you mentioned also should have been impacted by a favorite son of Georgia running as the Libertarian candidate. I haven't looked at how many votes are reported for Bob Barr, but I would expect that that would have juiced up turnout in some cases.
Well, you might think. And while most of the country experienced huge gains in turnout, I believe it was a tiny percentage of a gain in Georgia, which doesn't make a lot of sense, any more sense than what we're seeing in one of the two other contested Senate races right now up in Alaska, where turnout turned way down as well. So, of course, Alaska and Georgia came in with results that don't even resemble a lot of the pre-election polling and have turnout numbers that are way down. That's either legitimate or it's not, and that's what we need to figure out at this point.
Do we have any missing votes in Florida, any purged voters?
Florida or Georgia?
Georgia, I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you had all kinds of purged voters. You had that happening everywhere in the United States. That's, as you know, for months you and I had been on the air begging and pleading and warning folks about that. And ironically enough, even Tim Robbins, you may have seen this story, who had been on Bill Maher's show the week before warning people about the possibility of being purged from the rolls and doing everything they can to not vote provisionally, since so many of those ballots are never counted. He himself went to his New York polling place where he'd voted for a decade, and even though he'd voted in the primary, I believe, recently, he was purged when he got there. Now, he had, luckily, the means and the ability to get down, to see a judge, to get himself reinstated. As it turned out, he was on the rolls. It just wasn't on the poll books for some reason at his polling place, and we saw that all over the country. So he was able to get back on there and vote. How many people could not afford to take that time, did not know how to go through that process, is untold. We really don't know, but you know, I've heard anecdotal stories all over the place from that happening to people. We have got to clean up this registration system so bad guys can't play games with it the way they do, and that we don't have just the errors that we do. We're making it, once again, we're making it worse by privatizing a lot of the process by giving it to these private companies, and you know, we're giving up the public oversight of the entire system.
And here's a quick comment from actor Tim Robbins. The video's at bradblog.com.
You guys are, you know, this is what you have to do to vote.
Are you serious?
I had to go down to see a judge.
So what happened?
What happened was that my name was not on the roll, and I'm not the only one.
Okay.
While I was waiting, 30 people, according to poll workers, 30 people in 5 hours, first 5 hours of voting, had been taken off the rolls. So you can do the math on that. You know, six per hour.
Wow.
Per district across America.
I'm probably one of them as well.
Well, go vote.
Yeah, I'm going to right afterwards.
So you do the math.
Yeah. You know, and that was in, you know, liberal Democratic New York City. Imagine what it was like in states like those run by Karen Handel down in Georgia, where they really, really didn't want people to vote. They were trying everything they could to get people off those rolls. And you got a Secretary of State like her, horrible Secretary of State, in this case a Republican, overseeing the process and really not giving a damn about voters. You know, she wouldn't even extend voting hours down there because she claimed that early voting hours, because she claimed that it wasn't pre-cleared by the Department of Justice. Under the Voting Rights Act, they have to pre-clear certain laws, new laws, you know, that they do. So she couldn't extend the voting because it wasn't pre-cleared by the Justice Department, yet she felt just fine purging people from the rolls because their name didn't match perfectly with state databases. That was not pre-cleared by the Justice Department. So she's a hard right partisan, has made it very difficult for Jim Martin to win down there against Chambliss. But just to spread the love around, let me remind folks that it was in 2002 when the Democratic Secretary of State, Kathy Cox, brought in these Diebold systems and further went on to appear on the Diebold sales brochure singing their praises. So there's blame enough for everyone.
All right, Brad, we got a call from Monterey. My colleague Hal from KRXA has a question for you about Georgia. Go ahead, Hal.
Well, thanks, Peter. Before I get there, I want to spread a little love around to you guys. Just a tremendous job on Election Day. Really appreciate it greatly down here in Monterey.
Thank you.
And also, Peter, want to express my joy that you are going to remain with us for quite some time, it appears. That's very good news for
well,
the station. So,
thank you, Hal. I appreciate that. Yeah.
I'm delighted. Brad, I had at least one blogger tell me that he believes that Barack Obama would win Georgia, and the exit polls, as I understand it, clearly show Barack Obama with a significant lead. Is there any kind of a paper trail that can be used to verify the machine's tally?
Nope. How's that for a short answer? Absolutely nothing. Whatever the numbers came back as, that's what they are. And I haven't had time to look at the Georgia exit polls. And remember, they don't release the raw numbers. So, again, we just have to sort of go on faith from what the pollsters tell us and then go completely on faith from what the machines tell us. And, by the way, Hal, thanks. We had a lot of great callers coming in via KRXA late night during our election night special. It was great to hear from the folks in Monterey and Santa Cruz. So thanks for carrying our broadcast late into the evening there.
All right, Brad, can I just follow up real quick? In terms, now, see, of course, I just lost the thread. I forget, it always happens. You forgot what you want to ask. I'll just get off the air. Thanks, guys. Great work. I really appreciate it.
I think what he wanted to ask is, did McCain fraudulently win Georgia? And I don't know if we have enough information to say.
We don't, but I'm glad to confuse him with praise.
Okay, thank you. We'll continue in just a moment. If you have a question or a comment for Brad Friedman, bring it on now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. 888-573-8372. It's the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
Go ahead, take a deep breath. Yep, there's nothing like that new car insurance smell.
I love it.
Want to take it for a test drive?
Sure.
Wouldn't it be great if you could test drive car insurance? Well, maybe you can.
Notice all the impressive standard features. Good neighbor service for extra comfort and stability. And look how great it handles around those hairpin turns in your budget.
Check out the company 40 million other drivers trust, State Farm. No one gives more discounts to more drivers, and nobody takes care of you like a State Farm agent.
Who's that?
That's your built-in security system. Your very own State Farm agent.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Hey there. And who are those guys?
Oh, that's your award-winning claims department.
Wow.
So talk to a State Farm agent today and kick the tires on our car insurance. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Justin Hamble, your Monterey Bay State Farm agent. Call me today at 831-688-3683. That's 688-3683.
Good evening, everybody. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic report. Right now in Santa Cruz, on southbound Highway 1 at Rio Del Mar Boulevard, there is a traffic hazard. Taking a look at SoCal San Jose Road at Miller Road, there is a traffic collision with no injuries. Now moving on over to the Hollister-Gower area on Buena Vista Road at Wright Road, we have a two-vehicle collision and CHP is on the way there. We're still keeping our eye on San Miguel Canyon Road at Route 12, where a big rig has lost a large load of broccoli. CHP is on the scene there. That's it for your traffic on AM 540. Have a great afternoon, and stay tuned to the Peter B. Collins Show.
You better make the connection.
We're talking election protection issues here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
So you think this machine is democratic, all slick and clean and automatic, a paperless process right there on the touchscreen. But you never hear the tabulator tweaking late at night after you was all sleeping. A wham, bam, scam, and the program flips it from the cane. No way.
We continue now with Brad Friedman, Mr. Election Protection. He's the proprietor and citizen journalist behind BradBlog.com. And Brad, we've got a lot of listeners in Oregon and Portland and in southern Oregon along the coast. And there wasn't really a close election in the end. It was it took a long time to count the mail-in ballots. But Jeff Merkley won by about 4 or 5 points over Gordon Smith.
Right, and there were some concerns. Oh, what's taking so long in Oregon? What's going on? You know, we've really got to, you know, push back against the media and their need for speed in these races. You want it accurately, you know, or do you want it quickly? It's not always easy to have them both, and it's maddening when I see them, you know, pitching fits because they don't have totals immediately. In Oregon, you know, they've got a very sophisticated process of signature matching, and when there's problems with that, you know, contacting voters, that's all very important and needs to be done. I'm no fan at all of the mail-in ballot process, but whatever the process is, it needs to be as transparent and accurate as possible and needs to take the time that it needs to take. So hopefully they've got an election out there in Oregon now that the voters can feel confident in. Ultimately, that's the important thing. Actually, not that they feel confident, that they have reason to be confident, and hopefully they have exactly that in Oregon.
And we got Marjorie in Port Orford, Oregon, on the line. Go ahead, Marjorie.
Hi. By the way, I was so glad that we have paper ballots. If a recount was necessary, we at least had that for that race. But the reason I called was, remember a few weeks ago when there were these ballots in New York mailed out that were printed Barack Osama?
I did hear about that, yeah.
Yeah. In Rosselier County, as a matter of fact, where there's some questions about the a house race with our old friend Virgil Good up there.
What county was that?
Rosselier County, New York.
Rosselier. Okay,
yeah.
Well, do you know what the outcome was like? Did they reprint new ballots, you know, with his correct name?
The outcome, I hear Osama won. I'm not sure. I think, I don't know if they reprinted. I don't think they did. It was about 200 absentee ballots, as I recall, and thanks for that reminder, because I haven't gotten to go revisit that story, but I have a feeling I may have to swing by the Rosselier County Election Board to figure out what's going on in that Good race, so I'll try to
try to see what I can learn on that other score as well.
Okay, because I don't believe that any Democrat would mistake that letter B for an S, so it had to be Republicans.
Nobody would mistake that letter. They claimed at the time that it was a typo, although if you look at your keyboard, the B is pretty far away from the S, and it seems a bit of a coincidence, doesn't it?
Yes.
Margie, could I reward you with a copy of the DVD of Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story?
Oh, I would love that.
All right. Well, hold on. Give Katrina your address, and we'll put one in the mail.
Great.
And anybody who has been awarded one of these recently, I will get to the post office very soon, but there is a backlog, so be patient, please.
Oh, thank you.
All right. You're welcome.
Thanks, and enjoy it up there in Oregon, and have a big screening, and invite me to come up and give me a reason to come back to Oregon. I love it.
Oh, that would be wonderful. And, oh, by the way, we got the mayor we wanted in Port Orford, too.
Oh, good. Well, we like happy voters. Thank you, Margie. Okay, hold on here. Now, Brad, a little bit about Prop 8 here in California. It won by about 500,000 votes, but there's still some 3 million provisional and mail-in ballots that haven't been counted.
Correct.
Now, the opponents have conceded the loss. But in your view, is that premature? Should they wait until every vote is counted?
Well, you know, if my colleague Emily Levy from VelvetRevolution.us happens to be listening, perhaps she can call in to give us an update, because I hadn't heard that they conceded. Early on, I know the following day, Wednesday, they were saying it was too close to call while they were waiting to find out how many outstanding ballots there were out there.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be sorry to hear if they did concede before every vote was counted and counted accurately. But it has been Emily who has been covering that for us at Brad Blog.
Okay.
And I know she's a frequent listener to your show. So
all right. So Emily, call in and edify us. There was in the San Francisco Chronicle on Friday a story indicating that the opponents had conceded and they're looking at their options by going to court right now and then considering future ballot initiatives. So.
Yeah, well, there was also stories in AP that Norm Coleman won the race in Minnesota. So, you know, be careful about what you read.
In the corporate media, I understand.
That's right.
We'll take a break and return with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com. Upcoming, we're going to talk about the race in Alaska, where Ted Stevens, the convicted felon, appears to be running ahead, but there are serious questions about the turnout and other issues. And we're also going to talk about that very close race in Minnesota, where progressive talk show host Al Franken is very close to winning Norm Coleman's Senate seat.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
It's time for the 9th International Film Festival, presented by the local United Nations Association, with 14 excellent international documentary films, again at the gorgeous Golden State Theater in Monterey. There will be 4 film sessions, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings, November 13, 14, and 15 at 7 p.m., and Sunday afternoon, November 16 at 2 p.m. Admission is just $5 per day, with free entry for full-time students. These outstanding films concern global issues like human rights, the environment, impacts of globalization, and security. From 15 to 90 minutes long, and deal with countries and cultures as diverse as China, India, Bangladesh, New Guinea, Russia, Palestine, Argentina, and the U.S. Feature films include new documentaries, One Water, Stealing America Vote by Vote, The Judge and the General, about Pinochet of Chile, and Fire Under the Snow, about human rights in Tibet. That's November 13 to 16. At the Golden State. More at unamontereybay.org.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grovery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Let me welcome you.
This Friday, November 7th, 8 p.m., it's an all-new Planet Cruise Comedy Hour coming to the Columba Jazz Center in Santa Cruz. Santa Cruz, where people don't have opinions, they have convictions, mostly misdemeanors. Santa Cruz, where you can have Reiki performed on your car during an oil change. Santa Cruz, a city so progressive, people debate whether or not breast milk is vegan. Richard Stockton here to tell you we're going to be talking about happiness. This Friday, November 7th, yoga instructor in high heels and lipstick, comedian Vanda Mikulowski, Hindu comedian Daya, comedian Mickey Joseph, sound effects master Sven Davis, the Planetoid Band, the Outpatient Players, all at the Columba in Santa Cruz this Friday, November 7th, 8 p.m. Tickets $18 in advance, $23 at the door. Get your tickets at Santa Cruz, at Streetlight Records or Gateways Books, or go online, planetcruz.org. You're going to laugh your glutes off.
Holiday season is coming right up. This year, make sure to get the ideal gift for the special children in your life at Thinker Toys. For nearly 40 years, Thinker Toys has been the most fun place to shop on the Central Coast, with hot new games, books, a huge selection of toys, and a friendly, knowledgeable staff at two beautifully renovated shops. Ensure a great holiday and avoid the last-minute rush by shopping at Thinker Toys today. Open daily. Thinker Toys is in the Del Monte Center and downtown Carmel.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
1, 2, 3,
my baby don't mess around because she loves me so and I don't push her.
Peter B. Collins Show rolls on right before your ears. And if you desire more of the PBC product, you have a couple of options. Go to my website, peterbcollins.com. Links to our podcasts and archive programs there. And Friday night, Monday night, Tuesday night, I'm sitting in late night on Air America, 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and you can catch it on the stream at airamerica.com. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. We're talking about this past week's election and some of the anomalies, unresolved issues that remain. And, Brad, you get to choose the news here. Should we go to Alaska or Minnesota next?
Well, we can go to Alaska, and we can tease Minnesota, where we will beat up mercilessly on Al Franken, who you called a progressive talk show host. I would call him a Democratic talk show host.
Okay.
Progressive might be pushing the envelope a little bit there.
Okay, well, we'll deal with Al in a few minutes. So,
okay.
In Alaska, we have Ted Stevens, the convicted felon. We have Congressman Don Young. There's only one congressional seat in that big state. And he is seriously tainted with a lot of ethical problems. And then we had the governor of Alaska on the ballot there running for vice president on the McCain ticket. And presumably that would have produced the largest turnout in recent Alaska history. As we saw, turnout records broken was about 60% nationwide and came close to breaking the established record. And we came close to 80% turnout here in California. So what are the numbers from Alaska looking like?
Yeah, the numbers from Alaska make no sense whatsoever. Registration was way up between 2004 and 2008. It was almost static between 2000 and 2004. And yet turnout
appears to be down this year. As you said, even with their own governor on the ballot, with Barack Obama on the ballot, turnout at the general election, and a huge increase in early voting as well. And yet with Palin on the ballot and Obama on the ballot, it looks right now, well, as of yesterday, turnout looked to be 11% down from 2004. And late last night, as Shannon Moore, who's been covering at a Brad blog, she's up there in Anchorage, she said they suddenly found a bunch more ballots. But even with those found ballots now, they're still something like 6.5% shy of turnout in 2004. If anyone could come up for an explanation for that, I'd love to hear it. There's, you know, a lot of folks have said, well, the results were announced at 7 p.m. Alaska time, which meant that there was still an hour or so to go before the polls closed up there, so that people may have just given up. That doesn't make a lot of sense. That doesn't explain these kind of numbers, nor does it explain the disparity from the pre-election polls, which showed that Senator Ted Stevens was going to get trounced up there.
Mm-hmm.
That Congressman Young, who's under FBI investigation, that he was going to get beaten. In both cases, there was enormous swings, particularly in the House race, where Young is now up by something like 6 or 7%, and it was predicted he would lose by 7%. So that's like a 15-point swing.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, we saw a swing in the presidential race as well. I think the final pre-election polls up in Alaska were showing that McCain-Palin was winning by about 2%.
Mm-hmm.
As of now, they are winning, boy, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but something like 65 to 31%, which is an extraordinary spread, and almost precisely the same spread that Bush had over Kerry in 2004. So as we've declared it, something smells very fishy in Alaska with these numbers, and Alaska has a history of fishy elections, at least in recent history, and is one of the only places where the Democratic Party has actually gone to court to try to get at some of these records, some of these databases, these voting databases, kept proprietary by Diebold. Again, it's almost an all completely Diebold state up there as well. Luckily, they now have paper ballots and op scanners. But as we know, Diebold recently admitted that they drop thousands and thousands of votes routinely when results are uploaded to the server. And in the past, the state has fought to keep the databases out of the hands of the Democratic Party after elections, even going as far as to declaring it a national security risk if they should release this information. It's been pretty incredible to watch up there.
Now, Brad, you mentioned Diebold is the company that manages the tabulation devices there in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the anomalies that I read about at a different website is that while the vote count continues and the total vote continues to rise, the margin between Ted Stevens and Mayor Mark Begich continues to be exactly the same.
Yeah, and it was the same all day and all night, pretty much, on election night. As we were watching it come in, Shannon Moore was talking about, you know, thinking, well, I guess the more progressive areas, Anchorage and so forth, hadn't yet come in with their totals. It was pretty much 65-31 all night long from morning till night and remains so even now.
Mm-hmm.
Most notably, of course, is that Senate race, because while the totals in the presidential race may give us a tip that something is amiss here, the race that's really of concern ultimately would be that Senate race, because between the one in Georgia, the one in Alaska, and the one in Minnesota that we haven't talked about yet, we're looking at three seats that could give Democrats, if you include Joe Lieberman in that group, could give them the filibuster-proof majority that they've been shooting for.
Right. Yeah. And even without Lieberman, 59 votes is better than 56 or 57. And
well, sure.
On a good day, you could bring a couple of Republicans along to beat the cloture vote and stop a filibuster.
Sure. But, you know, if there's proper oversight in these elections and the citizens are allowed to reconcile, you know, ballots, voted ballots, unvoted ballots, spoiled ballots, and make sure that they are actually counting them all and counting them accurately, which you cannot do by these op scanners, then there's a very good chance that Democrats could see wins in all three of these still outstanding Senate races.
Yeah, and that is a very important item, and we will watch that carefully. Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com, 888-5-PETER-B if you'd like to join us. Now let's turn to Minnesota, where Al Franken took on the incumbent Republican Norm Coleman, and it was a long primary for Al, not real easy. He finally won the nomination in late August or early September, and on election night, well, it was too close to call. And the current margin is down to a couple of hundred votes, right?
Yeah, I think it's about 237 votes out of 2.5 million cast in that race, or I should say 2.5 million counted so far in that race. So, yeah, 237 votes, which, of course, is rather ironic, given that Al Franken had no interest whatsoever in voting systems, in issues of election integrity, for all of the years that he was at Air America. His show, I believe, was the only one on which I never appeared, and he actually went out of his way to not have me. And, you know, I don't mind whether he has me or not, but the fact that he would not talk about the concerns with voting systems, with Diebold, with ESNS, the company that supplies most of the optical scanners across Minnesota, although two of the three largest optical scanners, two of the three largest counties up there use optical scanners made by Diebold. But I suspect he's now having a bit of a crash course in election integrity at this point. And by the way, even prior to the election, just prior, he wasn't concerned. He said, oh, I'll let Mark Ritchie worry about that. Now, Mark Ritchie is the Secretary of State up there, Democratic Secretary of State, actually a pretty good one, one of a handful of Democratic Secretary of States around the country who are pretty good on these issues of election integrity. So that's good. It's certainly good that they have paper ballots up there in Minnesota, but, you know, concerns, there are serious concerns about the op scanners that counted them in the first place. So it's a good thing now that they'll have this statewide recount. Would have been a better thing had they had that hand count in the first place at the polling places, a decentralized count. But the machines that they're using up there, the ESNS machines, had failed a test just before the election, the same model out in a Michigan county, and the county officials there said that when they were doing their pre-election tests, that the M100 made by ESNS would not count the same ballots the same way twice.
Yeah.
So these are the type of systems that we're relying on. Of course, the Diebold ones, we all know how crappy they are. If you saw HBO's Emmy-nominated Hacking Democracy, you've seen that very same machine that they're relying on in two of the three largest counties. You've seen that machine hacked by a single person such that it completely flipped an election in a way that it would never be discovered unless you bothered to count the ballots. So once again now, we're getting back to actually counting the ballots. So I think that's a good thing up there in Minnesota, at least for this race. Who knows how many other races may have changed the results had we actually bothered to count the elections instead of trusting in Diebold and ESNS and Sequoia and so forth.
And, Brad, in respect to your comments about Al Franken and his denial of election problems in this country, you're not alone. Another very credible source came forward this week to comment on this same irony, and that's Professor Mark Crispin Miller from NYU. He's the author of two books about stolen elections, Fooled Again, and then a book that came out this year. The title escapes me, but I know you're a contributor to it, so you might remember.
Loser Take All.
Loser Take All.
Fraud from 2000 and from 2000 to 2008.
And what Miller affirms is that he was on Al Franken's show in 2004, raising questions about the stolen election in Florida in 2000, and Al poo-pooed him at every front. And Miller quotes Franken as at one point saying, oh, no, we looked into that and there was nothing there. We talked to an IT guy down in Florida, a Democrat. And Miller pressed him, who did you talk to? And Franken finally coughed up the name, and it was an IT guy. He was in Florida, but not only wasn't he a Democrat, but he was the IT guy for then Secretary of State Cruella DeVille, a.k.a. Catherine Harris. So,
yeah, they've had a long history of that. Unfortunately, it wasn't just Franken. In large part, it was across Air America as an entirety. I hope they've changed their policy. But Randy Rhodes has spoken of late that when she was at Air America, that it was forbidden to talk about these things, that was an actual policy back in 2004 and after the election. That's incredibly troubling to me. I haven't gotten to talk to her yet about it in detail, but I've heard her speak about it on her show on a couple of occasions. And even Al Franken, who had the opportunity with a great story that was ongoing in San Diego that we covered here in great detail on the
sure
Peter B. Collins Show in 2006, the Busby Bilbray race with the voting machine sleepover controversy in 2006 to replace Duke Cunningham. That happened at the same time that they were holding Democracy Fest down in San Diego. I was there coincidentally to speak at Democracy Fest as that story, as I had broken that story at the same moment.
Yeah.
Al Franken was there to do his show and purposely chose to not have me come in and talk about it. Had a right winger from the Union Tribune come in and talk about the election instead.
Wow.
And he got booed, by the way, when he said that Brian Bilbray had won. Because everybody there knew that that wasn't necessarily the case. Apparently nobody bothered to tell Al Franken.
Well, you know, St. Paul fell off a horse on the way to Damascus, and maybe this is the cathartic moment for Al Franken.
All is forgiven. I'm happy to help him.
All right, let's hope he can ride that horse to Washington so that he can introduce some legislation to clean up our electoral process. We'll take a break and return to some phone calls for his Bradness. Brad Friedman is here with us for another segment, and you can join in toll-free, 888-5-PETER-B. And if you want to listen on the weekend and send me a note, I'd be happy to hear your comments, peter@peterbcollins.com. That's my email.
KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good evening, everyone. This is Fia Kareem with your KRXA 540 AM traffic and weather report. Right now on Highway 1 at South Struve Road, we have a traffic hazard. A vehicle is in the middle of the road, so watch out there. Taking a look at the Hollister-Gilroy area on Buena Vista Road at Wright Road, we have a two-vehicle traffic collision with no injuries. CHP is on the way there. Now for some weather. Tonight is mostly clear with lows in the mid to upper 40s. Saturday will be partly cloudy with highs in the 60s. Saturday night will be mostly cloudy with a chance of showers. That's traffic and weather on AM 540. Have a great commute and a wonderful weekend. Stay tuned for the Peter B. Collins Show.
Hi, I'm Scott Dick, the host of the new show, curiously enough, called The Scott Dick Show, weekdays following the Peter B. Collins Show. Every evening from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll talk about local and regional issues, national and international politics, military and veterans affairs, and anything else that hasn't been lip-smacked to death already. So hang around after the Peter B. Collins Show and tune in to the gift you just can't return, The Scott Dick Show, weekdays 6 to 8 p.m., where I'll shoot from the lip and take no prisoners.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Ben Fischel. Our top item today, MSNBC Live anchors presented an outdated poll from Arizona State University Southwest to show that the presidential race was tightening in western battleground states. Here's David Schuster.
This number is getting some attention because it shows Barack Obama and John McCain tied at 46. And again, this is a state where NBC News' political unit has been projecting New Mexico in Barack Obama's column for over a month.
But the ASU poll was actually 2 weeks old when it was released. A newer Rasmussen poll, conducted on October 28th, 11 days after the ASU survey, shows Obama leading in New Mexico. But today's most outrageous comment goes to talk radio host Bill Cunningham discussing Barack Obama.
Jews for McCain, because Obama wants to gas the Jews, like the PLO wants to gas the Jews, like the Nazis gas the Jews. You got Obama introducing Arab terrorists.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org.
Hi, I'm Audrey Williams.
And I'm Melvin Williams.
Check out our new show, Holy Hip Hop on the Block, every Saturday from 10 to 12 noon, right here on KRXA 540 AM.
Check us out.
Continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, talking with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. 888-5-PETER-B is my toll-free number. A couple of callers for you. But first, Brad, an email just blew in. And speaking of denial about electoral realities, Barbara notes that there's only one newspaper, we think, in the entire United States that didn't mention one word about Obama's victory, the Wednesday edition of the Sepulpa Daily Herald. In Sepulpa, Oklahoma, didn't mention one word about Obama, but there was room to cover the fact that McCain had carried Oklahoma by a wide margin. When the editor was confronted on this, he said, the Obama thing was old news.
That's odd.
On Wednesday morning, yeah.
Yeah, that's odd.
All right, Richard in Eureka, listening on the mighty KGOE. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, guys. You know, I think it's interesting to point out that, today I listened to Sean Hannity for about 15 minutes.
My condolences. And,
yeah, thanks.
But you should shower
anyway,
immediately.
What he was talking about was that, the Democrats are flipping votes in Minnesota, and it's a stolen election. And I thought it was very interesting that, he would go in this direction when, obviously, it's so not true.
Interesting, perhaps hardly surprising. It's funny you mention it because as during the breaks here, I've been working on an item responding to John Hinderaker, I guess that's how you say his name, over at the horrible Republicanist right-wing blog site Powerline, who is making similar contentions about the race. And so I'm going to try to straighten him out. Hopefully I'll run this piece tomorrow or so. And give him a little help, explain what's really going on, and reach out across the partisan divide and tell him I'll be happy to explain what he clearly doesn't understand about the voting system. I suspect Hannity doesn't understand it either. In both cases, I suspect they couldn't give a damn. That's about
well, right on, Brad. But you know what? The Republicans are famous projectors, and, when they're stealing an election, they want to point the other way and say the other guy's doing it.
Wait a minute. Richard, did you study at the same pesticide plant as Tom DeLay?
I go, no.
Because that was his whole game, the kind of projection that you just described. If he was stealing votes, he would thump his chest and say, the Democrats are stealing votes.
Well, it's an old trick. They've been doing it for, 12, 15, 20 years? How long?
Yeah. Well, that's why we need. Look, that's why we need a transparent system that both that defies Hannity's claims that someone is stealing the election. If it's out there in public for everyone to see, then nobody can make that claim, and we can actually get an accurate result. That's what I'm after. And these dinosaurs like Hannity and Hinderaker, well, the hell with them. They're we'll put them behind us anyway.
Well, I just want to say it. President-elect Obama, congratulations, America.
All right. Richard, would you like a copy of the DVD documentary, Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story?
Sure, Peter.
It features Brad Friedman in his repertorial role.
Man, I love Brad.
And you still want it?
Richard, hold on. We'll mail you a copy, okay?
Right on.
All right, great.
Hey, let me toss in, if folks aren't lucky enough to get a free copy, you can get your own at votinglies.com. Patty Sheriff's great new film. I just want to give her credit and kudos there for being so generous with us.
Now to Gabriella Elk Grove, hard by Sacramento. Hello, Gabriella.
Hi, Peter. It's been a long time since I talked to you.
I'm glad to hear from you.
Thank you. I wanted to know if you know something about the Amero, the new coin you know, this rumor has been circulating for a while. They say that the Amir is going to replace the dollar because the dollar is going to crash pretty soon.
Isn't that actually the coin that you use to pay toll on the NAFTA highway? That was a joke, Kevin.
Okay, I don't know. But what I'm afraid of is that, well, they say that $800 billion were sent to China to us in form of the Ameros, and that the dollar is going to crash and many people are going to lose their 401ks and, you know, the stock options that where they, you know, they could invest on. So basically people will get broke, you know.
Well, Gabrielle, where have you heard of this? Because you're the first to tell me about it.
Really? This is a video in YouTube, and the guy here, it is Hal Turner. In fact, he had a, perhaps you have heard about him, he had a radio station. Hal Turner.
I've heard the name, yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is one of those libertarian theories that's, you know, been out there along with the One World Order and the Amero and the NAFTA highway and all of this business. The dollar may crash and burn, but I don't think there is a, let me put it this way, I've seen no evidence that there is a secret plan to replace it with the Amero.
And what I am afraid of is that, many people didn't want Obama to be elected, no?
Yeah.
So if this is true, perhaps this is going to happen next year when Obama is in turn, and, you know, people tend to believe that the cause of the actual crisis, I mean, in that time, would be Obama. You see what I mean?
I do understand. Yeah, they're going to try to stick him with the blame. Gabriella, thanks a lot. We'll look into that, and I'll go to YouTube and check out that video and let you know what I think. Thank you very much for your call today. Well, Brad, I just want to take this moment to thank you for all the work you've done. Your work isn't finished. The elections are mostly over. Some we need to continue to watch as we've discussed this hour. But you're a great American, and you've performed an important role in trying to sound the alarm about the vulnerabilities of our election systems, including the computerized touchscreen machines and tabulators. And I just want to thank you on behalf of all of our listeners and most of the people in America.
You're very kind, and you know, without folks like you who took what I had to say and made that a hell of a lot louder, we wouldn't be getting as far as we have. So we got a lot of work ahead of us. Thanks for those kind words. Hopefully we'll wrap up these elections soon. I can take a break, and then we can start the business of restoring this electoral system once and for all.
Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Have a great weekend.
Talking with Coach Dennis about how to get fit and get rich while helping others do the same.
That's right, Peter. You can earn extra money from your home or office on a part-time basis in the health and fitness world. Your health, your body, and your net worth come down to one thing, taking action. Control your own destiny. As an online fitness coach like me, you can begin creating a better life for yourself and your family with better health, more energy, and more financial freedom. Hundreds of other successful online coaches nationwide are getting fit and getting rich and living the dream lifestyle that comes with a thriving internet business. We'll train you and even give you your customers. It couldn't be easier. Get fit and get rich. It's all done part-time, it's all done online, and it's all done when you have the time. Call me now, 702-299-5789. No obligation, that's 702-299-5789, or visit us online at fitandgetrich.com.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Jim Taylor. Today, the first news conference held by President-elect Barack Obama. Prior to it, in-depth meetings with his economic advisors. CBS News correspondent Chip Reed.
They chewed over key priorities in the days and weeks ahead, including pumping $100 billion into the economy.
I want to see a stimulus package sooner rather than later. If it does not get done in the lame duck session, it will be the first thing I get done as President of the United States.
His determination to prod Congress now, though, could find him at odds with President Bush during the 2.5 months before Mr. Obama is sworn in.
This Monday, there'll be a White House meeting.
When you disagree with decisions he makes, will you defer? Will you challenge? Will you confront?
Now is a good time for us to set politics aside for a while and think practically about what will actually work to move the economy forward, and it's in that spirit that I'll have the conversation with the president.
Another 240,000 jobs lost last month. Unemployment rate now at a 14-year high of 6.5%. Economists like Nigel Galt believe it's only going to get worse.
Given the prospect that jobs are going to continue to be lost at a rapid pace, unemployment is going to go higher, we're looking at an unemployment rate that's probably going to end up over 8%.
That's hundreds of thousands more workers out of work. CBS's Anthony Mason.
David Weiss of Standard & Poor's expects the unemployment rate will continue to rise until the end of next year.
We're now looking for a peak up over 8%.
We haven't seen those levels since the early 1980s, but layoffs continue to spread across the economy. 90,000 manufacturing jobs were eliminated last month, 49,000 in construction, 38,000 in retail.
Pending sales for existing homes falling 4.6% last month. Walter Maloney, National Association of Realtors.
We had tightening credit and economic conditions deteriorating, so we saw a pullback. But one positive note is that the index does remain above year-ago levels. It's the second month in a row.
Senator Robert Byrd turning his chief of appropriations post over to Senator Daniel Inouye. CBS News chief Washington correspondent Bob Schieffer says politically,
in the end, there's not going to be much change. Dan Inouye.